What is it dream everybody has? I know Krishna Lula always has a bottle of that and she's always swilling it and running off to the bathroom. So. Oh, I see. A bunch of junkies, huh?
Common fuel in the hungry yatra.
Huh?
It's a common fuel.
Okay, yeah, because I see her drinking it all the time. Well, it must be a diuretic also or something.
Yeah,
because we're always going to be a doctor.
Yeah.
So what is the topic today?
Mm-hmm.
Acha. That seems to be quite a... It would be interesting to know who arranged the topic today. I mean, who would be...
The thing is that, you know, it was Guru Krishna Prabhupada who asked the teachers which topic they would like to talk about, and after that we decided on the 4 days.
Oh, okay.
So those teachers who wish to discuss a topic, just said that they would like to raise some questions.
Okay.
And so it's Maharani Mataji who teaches Dharma Shastra and Manu Samhita, surprisingly enough. So.
Okay.
But you also mentioned that maybe Friday you will be not available for the afternoon.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, maybe we could, in the end of this day, we could raise some questions.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would think is that we do this up to lunch, and then after lunch, then we could go into your topic or a mix or whatever.
Yeah. But is it possible on Friday morning to continue with the civilization?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I'm saying the morning is definitely there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that. The morning is definitely there.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Okay. And depending on how we get today and what you think, then we can plan it.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Look, because those are fun. I mean, now, you know, these are more fun topics. Dharma Shastra and stuff. Because they're all connected.
Yeah.
Very nicely. Because Dharma Shastra is what the Brahmins and Kshatriyas study. Vaishyas could also look at it because they're leaders. But as an occupation, specifically, it's for Brahmins and Kshatriyas. But the first 6 chapters are also for Brahmin Kshatriyas Vaishyas because it's ashram dharma. Do you know the book? You're familiar with the book?
No.
You're familiar with the book? Okay, so Manu Samhita is 12 chapters.
We don't, yeah.
Right?
But there's no book like Dharma Shastra.
Dharma Shastra is a subject matter.
Yeah.
Within that, I think there's 20 main Dharma Shastras.
Mm-hmm.
Of that, 3 are main. That's Manu, Yajnavalkya, and Parasara. And of that, Manu is main. So Manu is the actual main, you know, just like in Upanishads, Isho is the main. Everything else is taking certain angles of it and this and that. You know, just like in the Veda, then the Purusha Shukta is the main thing. You know, or in the Pancharatras, Narada is the main. You know, so like this, then you have always the main, you know, essential one. So Manu is the one, everybody will support Manu. No one will contradict Manu. But, because Manu is dealing with all 4 ages, some of them specifically only deal with other ages, like some only deal with Satyatreta and Dwapara, some only, like Parasara only deals with Kali Yuga. Because there are some considerations in Kali Yuga that come up that Manu doesn't give so much detail. You know, he gives, like he'll say a woman doesn't get remarried. Right? That's just improper. She could, but, you know, it's just not recommended. You know, because the wedding texts are only meant for girls who have never been married. So technically, how would they be married again? Because the texts aren't meant for them. Right? But they could, by cutting out certain ones and just leaving the essential ones, and they could be remarried. So Parasara then will mention, if the girl is young, the husband dies young, there was no children. Right? Then, so technically she's still a virgin. Right? Because in Manu's concept, you only you know, have sex if you're going to have children. So if there's no children, there was no sex. So technically she's a virgin, though she's been through the rites. She could be remarried. But that's Parasa for Kali Yuga only. Other ages, no. She just knows it, and Kali Yuga things go weird. Because in other ages, the husband wouldn't die when they're young. But due to sin and all that, then girls may have husbands that die young. Excuse me. Women may have husbands that die young. Right? You know, just like mothers may have children that die before that and that. It's not supposed to happen. You know, if things are pious, the parents always die before the children. Right? Does that make sense? So in Manu, then, it's got 12 chapters. The first chapter is like the opening and establish creation and actually the origin of the sacred law. And the 12th chapter basically is describing transcendence. You know, the metaphysics of how karma works and how you're actually supposed to get out of here. Right? Then, with the... Yes?
De azt mondjuk, hogy a brámanák része, a védekben a brámanák része a dharmaszásztra.
But you said that in the Vedas, the dharmaszásztra is part of the brahmanas.
It's an expansion. It means from the brahmanas, it's in that category. The brahmanas, then, are from them come the Greek dharma sutras. From the dharma sutras come the dharma shastra. Right. So that's the line. So because everything can connect back to the Veda. Because those who don't accept smriti see everything as Veda. Right, so certain shastras they'll see as Veda, and others as smriti, so they don't accept those. Like Mahabharata, they'll see as smriti, you know, like that. But you can put it that the Puranas are the fifth Veda. So then, Mahabharata then in this way becomes part of the Veda. The Upavedas are all part of the Veda. You know what I'm saying? They just have another way is to take the Veda and just appendage everything either from the bottom or from the edge. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So then the second, third, fourth, and fifth chapters. No, and six. Yeah, and seven. I mean, second to sixth chapter, then deal with ashram dharma. Like that. So they're taking from the samskars, then brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. And then summing that up. So that's for all. Brahman, kshatriyas, vaishyas. It's brahminical culture, but it's for the dvijas. There's not a separate ashram culture for kshatriyas or for vaishyas. The culture is brahminical. But then in the 7th through 11th chapters, let's say actually 7th through 10th chapters, then you're giving the Kshatriya Dharma. And they touch on the Vaishya and Shudra Dharma. They are not allowed to perform brahminical brahminical economic occupational duties. Right? So they don't teach, they don't do puja for others, they don't accept charity. Right? They don't live by begging. Right? They don't live by just taking whatever comes to them. Right? The Kshatriya must protect and take tax. And the Vaishya must create economics. Right. So that's their dharma. But as far as the spiritual goes, the ashram dharma, that's exactly the same. And it's reflected into the shudra. Shudras also will follow it to that degree that they can. But if they can't, they're not considered fallen. Because you can't, at least within human life, you can't fall below a shudra. Right? You can drop below human life into tribals, But as a human being, you can't get lower than Shudra. So if a Shudra, if a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya doesn't follow, they will drop down to the level of a Shudra. But a Shudra who doesn't follow still stays a Shudra.
The tribals are not considered as human.
Tribals are below the human. They're below Varnashram. Because they don't really follow the Vedic culture.
So you the definition of tribal is someone who doesn't apply the Varnashrama Dharma with society?
Yeah, like that. So like that. So that means, you know, basically except for those who are properly situated in Varnashram, the rest of the world are all tribals. They may be sophisticated tribals. You know, because that's one of the things, one of the 64 arts is learning Malecha sophistry. You know, because they always develop their own sophistication. You know, like you sit down at the table and there's so many plates and so many cups and so many knives and forks and spoons, and there's a whole art to using them and what is used for what. So it's very sophisticated, but it's still sophisticated tribals. Because their whole purpose is eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Bas, that's it. Mm. You know? So they're still tribals, yeah. Tribals. It means the Vedic, then they just follow whatever they can of the Vedic. Right, you see, means you still see tribals and gypsies and other things in India, and you know their women are chaste and they follow basically much of the Vedic culture, but they just don't follow that seriously and they're not necessarily interested in spiritual life like that. But you know, as far as let's say the Western goes, they're probably more pious, though less sophisticated. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is generally we take culture and sophistication to go together. But you can't have sophistication without culture, and you can have culture without sophistication. So the worst is unsophisticated, uncultured. Right? From the Vedic viewpoint, then sophisticated and uncultured is the next step. Then above that would be cultured but unsophisticated. And then, you know, better would be sophisticated and cultured. You know? Cultured meaning, you know, following the Vedic principles. See that they're following their laws and not bothering anybody and not bothering the civilized people. You know, they can't come and steal and bother and make trouble or politics or warfare or stuff like that. But if they live peacefully and cooperatively and don't bother the civilized people, and if they ever have any difficulty in following their own laws, then the king will come in and establish it for them. You know, like according to their tradition, like, you know, say you take like England had a law that any of the local people, you know, any of the Celtic people, if they got married, then the first night, it was the right of the local, whoever authority, to spend it with the girl. Right? So that's a tribal law, even though the British pride themselves in being sophisticated, but whatever. So if there came up some altercation on that, then the king might have to step in and settle it. But that's according to their tradition, you know, according to civilization, that's got nothing to do with it. You know, or if it's too much against the Vedic law, then he may, you know, stop it. That's if they're close enough that they're working with the kings. But if they're way out in the forest, you don't bother them. You let them live however they live. Like that. Because it's just like the king who conquers another king, then he establishes somebody on the throne and approves all the local traditions and customs as long as they're not against the Vedic rules. That's for civilized people. Right? So then he would authorize it. It's all bona fide and everything like that. You know? And he would give support to the new king. So which would generally be the son of the king he's conquered. You know, the king himself if he surrendered. If he didn't surrender and he died in battle, then his son. Or whoever the local administration felt was qualified. In other words, he would come in and establish his authority, but in cooperation with the present administration that's already there. Because right? They're the ones that have to run it anyway, so they should be happy. You know, the citizens should be happy. So the same principle applies. You want to establish a king, then the present king himself has to be satisfied that the, you know, what do you call it, incumbent king is going to be, you know, good. He'll be up to standing. Then he sees that the elders in the administration and all that connected to the mission are satisfied also. And then that the people are. Right? So in the modern, it's simply what the people want. He's qualified, not qualified, that doesn't matter. But the Vedic is the people should be satisfied and want that leader. So you have that element of the accomplishment of what the democratic system is for. But you only put people up to the public for their, how do you say, approval that are qualified. What I'm saying? So every element that is there in any culture is already there in its perfection in the Vedic. It's in its balance. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that the Vedic is balanced. Every other culture is a little bit off balance one way or the other. But even within the Vedic, actually only properly the Vaishnava is properly balanced. Because then they can properly deal with all levels. Other levels don't know what's above them, so they wouldn't properly be able to. Means non-Vaishnav communities could only deal with Vaishnavas as Brahmins. But they wouldn't actually understand their level is actually even more mature, advanced Brahmins. Right, because they don't know what devotion is. Like that. Does that make sense? They can know what the emotional aspect of devotion is, but they can't know what the transcendental is. You know, so some may respect or appreciate the emotional aspect, but, you know, that they're nice and devotional and that. Okay, that's great. Because even the karmis, you can say it's devotional music, and oh, okay, nice, it gives some nice sentiment. They don't know devotion means transcendental. Does that make sense?
Why
the
anulomaya is considered better than platinum?
You ever run your hair? It's like this. This way is very smooth, right? What happens when you run it this way? It prickles, right? Yeah? So this is lom means hair. Anu means this way. Prati means this way. You understand? Anu means with the grain, prati means against the grain. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, there's a few reasons. One is, it means you have the conversation of, or the discussion of the field, the seed in the field, right? So the point is you have a field, you plant an eggplant seed, you get an eggplant. Right? You don't get something else. So that's the point, is the seed, whatever the seed of the Father is, that's what kind of living entity you're getting. But that will be adjusted according to the field. Right? So the field, then the woman, the field, if it's good field, it'll come out good, and if it's a bad field, it'll come out bad. You know what I'm saying? So one would say, well, then they should always be good fields. But there are some things that don't grow in good fields. They grow in bad fields. Like you take castor. It doesn't grow in a nice field. It grows wherever there's, you know, rubble and dry and, you know.
What castor is?
Huh?
What's castor is?
Castor.
What's castor?
Castor is, it's got this... these big leaves, they kind of look like papaya leaves, but they're pointy. And I think they got thorns on them. And the fruit, the seed pod, has got spikes all over it. And there's big kind of black seeds. They're like a fenugreek, but bigger. And you squeeze that, and you get oil, which is the best for lamps. It gives the brightest. It's also when you get constipation and that, your mother gives you a spoon of that. Tastes disgusting. Huh?
Say again.
Of course, ritimus. Come on. That's it. Right? So that doesn't grow in good soil. It always grows in wild, crazy places that nothing else grows. So that's the proper soil for it. It grows in bad soil. It flourishes in bad soil. You understand?
Yeah.
So therefore, the different kinds of seeds flourish in different soils. So a Brahman seed flourishes in a Brahman's field. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, or a Sudra seed flourishes in a Sudra field. So when you mix it, the plant doesn't, the plant that you get and the fruit won't come out to be ripe. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, when the other thing is the man, the father will be the nature. Like that, the mother will be like the spirit. Right? So if you have a Brahminical nature and a Kshatriya spirit, they can't be peaceful and just sit and do this study. They always got to prove themselves, they always got to be better than everybody else, they got to challenge it. Or they're a Brahminical nature and a Vaishya, so they'll use their brains for money instead of using it for sitting and studying. Right? And if it's with a Shudra, then he'll be into the arts and all this kind of thing, and very intelligent, but he'll be into the arts and not able to follow basically the Vedic standards. You know what I'm saying? So it's one thing you have a person who can't follow the standards but has no brain. But if they have brain and they're going against the Vedic standards, that's bad. Right? If you have a rough and ready, nasty guy, you know, I could go down to the docks and you got some rough and ready guy, okay, but he doesn't make any trouble. You know, maybe at the pub he'll make a few fights or this and that, but he can't start revolutions, he can't start this and that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the whole point. Because he doesn't have the brain to do it. You know what I'm saying? So as you go down, it gets bad. Eshalavi was a nishada. That means that class of person means the man, the father is a Brahman, the mother is a Kshudra. So you see, he had the desires and that, the drive to go there and the focus to study like a Brahman. But he wouldn't follow the principles of a Brahman. Guru rejected him, he still goes anyway, against the order of Guru. And you know, as Kshatriya, if he's going to study, then he sits there and he takes his bath, he does his sadhana, he does these things, then he fights. Well, this boy never took a bath, never did anything, all he did was shoot arrows all day. So he became very good. but he has no standards, no culture. So somebody that good is dangerous because they have no standards. Does that make sense? Even though it appears he's very devotional and cultured, he's not, because he doesn't follow any proper standards. He's a nishada. There's a tribal. You know what I'm saying? And that particular group of nishadas were against the king, so that makes it even more dangerous. Right? So, not only that, you know, so it's just, this is bad. Does that make sense? So that's the Anuloma. Right? Then Pratuloma gets worse. You have a Shudra then who then makes trouble in the business field. The Shudra who goes out into the Kshatriya field. The other one at least it's, you know, going the other way. The Brahminical, but you know, or a Kshatriya who's into business, or Kshatriya with the Shudra. You know, that's bad. Because they'll be rough and violent. You know, but still, there's some principles there. Because you're dealing with the Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya. But the other way, then you're dealing with the Shudra, and then it's going up. So then you have a Shudra Vaishya, then it's a problem. Because they'll do anything to make money. Kshatriya, they'll go to any length for their politics. Or the Brahminical areas, then they'll go in and make so much trouble. You know, just turn culture upside down. You know, like this modern thing is saying that, you know, the men made a conspiracy to keep the women down. But that means the women are accepting the men are very intelligent. So all the men of the world got together and made this plan. So that means they've defeated themselves by already admitting that men are more intelligent than the women. You know what I'm saying? But here you have people that are just jumping up and down and demanding that what's against Vedic principles is bona fide, and we have it in our society. This is because of mixed caste. Why would they say that, you know, what Prabhupada's done is wrong, or, you know, we gotta do all these different things, it's that, it's just not the Vedic principles. You know what I'm saying? It's just, we don't do that. Vedic culture is very tolerant and broad-minded. It can handle the tribals, it can handle all kinds of weird stuff, but you can't say it's standard and it's okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then like that, it's a problem. Aroma Harshana Sutta. Sutta means Kshatriya and Brahmin. So it's a Kshatriya, but they could function in the Brahminical because the mother's Brahminical, because the son takes on the qualities, the spirit of the mother. Right? But you see when Balaram came, there's prestige. That's the Kshatriya thing, not the Brahmin thing. Brahmin, God comes, he stands up. Kshatriya then, well, I'm sitting on the asan, so whoever's on the asan doesn't stand up for anybody. That's anybody but God. You know? Like that. So therefore, that's why he was killed. Because up to that point, he was acting as a Brahmin. But at that moment, he was acting as a Sutta. So therefore, Sutas don't sit on the throne. I mean, on the Vyasasana, so he was killed. Does that make sense? From that effect. Now if we look at it from male-female, the man, he has his nature, the woman adjusts to it. Right? Out of affection, a man can be considerate and try to be more cooperative with the woman. But he can't adjust his nature. But out of affection, a woman can completely adjust her nature. Because she's only manifesting, the only use of the nature is that it gives you a foundation for interacting with other people to get rasa. Right? But for the taste of rasa, woman can adjust anything. So if the husband's higher and the woman's lower, then her coming up is a plus. Right? So therefore it's anuloma. It's actually, she will be improved. It means if she doesn't improve, she's a shudra, she stays as a shudra, that's okay. because that it's not expected. But sometimes out of the such good quality of chastity and character, then they will move up to the higher realm. Therefore, we see in the Vishishta. Go in tomorrow. Okay. The example is given Vishishta, one of his wives is a tribal, but because of her chastity, she became accepted as a high-grade Brahmin by her activity and attitude and everything. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. But if you do it the other way, then that means you take a Brahmin woman and she has to come down and she's and act like a Shudra. So it's a loss. In other words, the man's not going to change anyway. So in one, the woman improves, the other one, the woman degrades. I've seen it myself, a Brahmin woman with a Vaishya man. She's right into sadhana, this, that, drove the husband nuts. You know, he wasn't that much of a sadhaka. You know, stable, but not, you know, like, you know, everyday Mangalartik and this and that. And she, you know, like that, they were fighting for years. And then one day she just, you know, okay. And then she just took up the mood like a Vaishya. House very peaceful, husband's very happy, but it's a loss. You know, you have a Brahmin woman, all that training, she has to give it all up to, you know, for the peace in the house. Because a man, he can accommodate. It's okay if she does, but she shouldn't bother him. Right? But it's hard for a Brahmin to live with someone who's not doing. You know, it's your partner and that you know, you do things together. So she had to adjust where she became like a Vaishya. And then it was fine. And then now, as the man in his maturity, as he gets older, he gets more into sadhana, his wife's still stuck as a Vaishya. Like before. You know, so she's not coming back up as he kind of like now sees the importance of the sadhana and the preaching and the brahminical kind of thing. She's not coming back up. She's just, you know, just stuck now in the whole Vaishya scene. You understand? That's pratiloma. Just so much, you know, it means if you have something you're doing and then that's shattered and then you just drop it, then you just stay like that. Why do you even won't make the effort? Right? Because people she lived with before were doing, therefore she did. Then when she drops that, because that's what the husband wants, she may not be so sensitive to notice, because now she's absorbing the kids and the house and this and that. You know, before it was the sadhana and the kids in the house went around that, but now it's the kids in the house and then sadhana's on the side. So if he gets a little better at sadhana, that's okay because she's busy in the house. Right? And also because the son has the spirit or the nature of the mother. That kind of. Does that make sense? So it's like you have the varna of the father, the culture of the mother. Like that. It's not recommended, but it's just saying that if it does happen, that's what it's done, but it's not recommended at all. Because automatically the sons aren't the same. Right? If it's analoma 1 degree down, they're not a different species. Right? They're anantaras. So a Brahmin man, a Kshatriya woman, the son's a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya man, Vaishya woman, it's a Vaishya. Vaishya man, Shudra woman, it's a Shudra. They're not a different species. But if it's 2 degrees or it's anything pratiloma, they're actually a different species of life. Does that make sense? A Nishada is a species. A Brahmin is a species. Kshatriya is a species. Vaishya is a species. Like this. And when you mix it, Nishadas, Swapachas, Chandalas, you know, Ugras, you know, all these things, they're all different species. You know, that's what it says. There's 400,000 species of human life. You know, so these combinations, you know, 15 main ones, and then you get worse and worse and worse. Right? Like the, what's it called? Antarvasayin. That is even considered an outcast amongst outcasts. Right? Because basically he's saying you're taking a nishada. I think it's either it's a nishada. Nishada boy a chandala boy with a nishada girl. Because technically a nishada and chandala are about the same. Because they're 4 degrees difference. Right, it's Shudra Brahma and Brahma Shudra. But at the same time, because it's Pratiloma, chandala is Pratiloma, it's technically a touch lower than a nishada. Right? So if you match those two, so then you're getting basically 8 degrees difference. They're way out of it. Unless the Ananta is a Swapacha. It means with a chandala with a Swapacha. I don't remember. Swapacha means is that there's two parts Shudra. You know, in other words, it means it's a Swapacha would be if you had a nishada girl. No, excuse me. A nishada boy marry a Shudra girl. So then it's got some pratiloma in it. Right? Then that drops the nishada to Swapacha. So maybe a Swapacha and a chandala. You know, then that gets, I don't know, but it's one of those two gets your antavasayin. So even amongst the outcasts, they won't, the other tribals won't deal with those ones. They're like way out of it.
Just a very short question. So legally, tribals considered among humans?
Tribals, they're subhuman.
But they are counted in the 400,000.
Yeah, 400,000 species of life. But what we're saying is, of 400,000, very few of them are civilized. Civilized means they follow Varnashram.
Yeah, but we call them human.
They're humans. But when we say human, meaning it's just like this. You got this guy with this pedigree, whatever, Doberman Pinscher, right? And then there's this dog that's out on the street that's a complete mutt, right? I don't know. Mutt means, in English, it means a complete a street dog. It's just a mix of every whatever happens to be out on the street.
A mongrel.
A mongrel, yes. Now, a mongrel is also a dog, right? But if you're talking about those who are into dog owners, a mongrel's not a dog. A pedigree is a dog, and a mongrel is not. So that's the meaning. It means 400,000 are humans, meaning they have, you know, 2 arms and a head and 2 feet. So they would be able to take up devotional service. You know, they technically could have the intelligence to do it. Right? But as far as culture goes, only a small amount of the 400,000 then follow Varnashram, so they're actually considered actually civilized humans. So you can say there's humans, but uncivilized and civilized. Civilized means Varnashram, uncivilized means not Varnashram. Does that make sense? So the uncivilized, then if they're on this planet, they're tribals. You know, but it's not necessarily the tribals if they're from the Bhuvar, you know, the Antariksha. You know, your Paisachas and Yakshas, Rakshasas. They may be following, not following. You know, if they are following, then they're, you know, if they're not following, they're just that cat, they're not tribals. They'll be, you know, generally Dhanavas. You know, Daityas are sophisticated. Generally, Daityas follow Varnashram. Dhanavas don't. Like that. So the Dhanavas are like the tribals of the demons.
You know.
But, you know, they kind of get along. You know, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, you know, Jarasandha, these are daityas. Right? Because they're sophisticated, they follow Varnashram. You know, these ones you come across in the jungle, you know, with these, big, huge, hairy guys that just, eat everything coming along and this and that. And those are dhanavas. Like that. But sometimes also they have a little bit more normal form if they're dhanavas.
But they are counted among the human species.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just a matter of whether they're civilized or uncivilized. So here, when we were saying human, we mean civilized. And tribal meant uncivilized. But it might be for, how do you say, Western etymological satisfaction. It may be easier to say, civilized and uncivilized. But even that's not enough, because when you're dealing with those who are sophisticated but uncivilized, they consider themselves civilized, and those who are unsophisticated, uncivilized, to be the uncivilized ones. You know?
So they make civilization and sophistication?
Yeah, like that. It's just like if you're taking a standard of 1 to 10.
Yeah.
Somebody on 10, anything below 6 is kind of like getting below standard. But if you only are working on a standard of 2, then 1 is below standard and 2 is fine. Like that. Like that. So that's all. It's a very, you take something, some organic, generally vegetable substance, and you rot it. And depending upon how you rotted it, and in what, and for how much time, and at what temperature, then people sit around with, large, sophisticated noses, little funny, very round-bellied glasses, single-stemmed glasses, and smelling and this and telling that, oh yes, this is, better and this is less and all that. All it is just they're very, high-grade, sophisticated pigs. because they can tell the difference between something rotten, more rotten, finely rotten, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's like that. That makes sense. Like that, yeah. It's funny if you look at it from another perspective, it kind of like becomes a little hilarious. Otherwise it seems so serious and mature, It's like I saw this one, I think it was Farside or something. There was this, the typical white man who's out on a safari in the jungle, the outfit and the pith helmet and everything. And then you got the typical tribals, with the bones in the noses and a few feathers. And they got the big cauldron on the fire, right? And they got this guy in the cauldron. And he's looking over at their kind of setting up like a dinner table, And then the guy in the pot, the white man, says, "You are savages, taking, red wine with white meat." Like that, so.
Accepted in the family just as everyone else, and they're getting trained or they're brought up as...
It depends. If they fall within the dvijas, then they're trained as dvijas. If they fall as shudras, they're trained as shudras. But they're part of the family.
That's
right. In other words, if you mix it, then... how you say? In other words, 6 out of the 12 combinations will basically technically fall within the dvija. They have the option they could. Anantras always will. So that means 3 of them always will. You know what I'm saying? So Brahman, Kshatriya, Brahman, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, right? Those will fall in, and the opposite on the other side. But Brahman, Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, those are Anantras, so they're just Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. They're not a different species. But Brahman, Vaishya, that's a different species. And then on the other side, but all of the ones on the other side, all three on the other side, are all a different species. But because they're connected to the Dvijas, there is the chant, the possibility, by association and training, they will come out as a Dvija. So they're given that opportunity if they show the nature. If not, then they'll be trained whatever is their nature. Like a Sutta means Kshatriya father, Brahman woman. Could be a Brahman, could be a Kshatriya, or could be a chariot driver, or it could be someone who snares animals. Right, those are all the stations that mentality could fall at. So more pure to be Brahminical, you know, not the Kshatriya, than so, in other words, if they show Dvija tendencies, then they would go to Gurukul and all that, just like any other member of the family. But if they don't, then they would be trained as a chariot driver. And if they're just too low class, they can't do that, then they're just tribal. Does that make sense? A little different. It technically speaking, still the varna would be set by the father because it's the seed. But the spirit is taken from the father. The girl takes the spirit of nature from the father, while the boy takes it from the mother. Technically, if you're going by the seed in the field, it would. So they would more be like the father. Like that. But the point is, you know, you're talking about sons. You know, because it's the sons who are going to carry on the tradition and do the... You know, in other words, a woman has a nature that is, in other words, is... How do you say? Because we have overlapping words and definitions. Who her conditioned nature is suited for a Brahminical environment, Kshatriya environment, Vaishya environment, Shudra environment. But at the same time is, depending on the mood, she can adjust that. Right? Better she doesn't have to. But if she does, then it can. So if she does, then better it's Anuloma, because then she's adjusting up. Does that make sense? Some will really strongly make the point that a woman has no nature, it depends upon her husband. That's the social status. But her inherent nature is there. Otherwise, if it's not, what's the meaning of astrology? Right? If there wasn't, you wouldn't have to have astrology, because it's just any woman could go with any man and it would work. But the Vedas make a very great point is that, you know, you have a Brahman woman, a Kshatriya. So, in other words, what her father is, technically that's what she would be. Like that. But still, within that, she does have her nature. So generally, it will always be that of the father. You know? So you look at that, but she has a nature. But her social status will be that by who she marries. So even if she's from a high-grade Brahmin family, she marries a Shudra, her social status is that of a Shudra. And the Vedic, it doesn't go up because of the woman. You know, the modern, okay, you marry a rich woman, then you're supposedly rich, but everybody else would just think that you're the husband of the rich woman. They don't say, you're rich. Right? You know, it's just like, what's his name? Philip. He's Queen Elizabeth's husband. He's not a king. Right? You know what I'm saying? But, you know, if you have the king, his wife is the queen. You know what I'm saying? So her status is set by that. So he's a king, she's a queen. But she's a queen, he doesn't become a king. So even in the Western it works like that. Does that make sense?
But.
Okay.
A vörnesem az ugye abban különbözik a kasztrendszertől, hogy nyitott, vagyis itt nem a születés alapján, hanem a képességek és a tevékenységek alapján kerül le valaki egy
helyzetbe.
Birth is what you're dealing with, what you do with it, that's another thing.
Születéssel foglalkozol, de hogy mit kezdesz vele?
You'll generally find that 80% of the time the child has the nature of the parents. It's very rare it's outside of that. So you start from that. But the point is Varnashram is open, that if they show the nature of something else, they can be that. But generally it'll always be that of the parents. Right? One may argue, but then Karna, he's a Kshatriya, why is he dealt? But was he a Kshatriya? He had the fighting spirit and all that, but did he have the refined nature? No. They're having a graduation ceremony. Right? It's amongst Dronacharya, his pupils, their parents, and the citizens. It's a private program. Who asked Karna to come in there, slap his arms and say all kinds of things, come in and insult the teachers, Drona and Kripa? And then come there to show that he's better. Who cares? Why does he have to prove it? So therefore, that's why the Pandavas dealt with him as a Sutta, not as a Kshatriya. Right? If he had come in a more gentle way, been involved in a more gentle way, then they would have seen this person has good character, would have brought him in. But he came in such an uncultured, uncalled for fashion, they always dealt with him as that. Right? Even you're insulted by a woman. Right? It means that the Swayambar, he came forward. But he's already shown his nature. Draupadi doesn't want to marry somebody like that. You know, she wants somebody who's cultured and refined. Her father is a very, you know, refined man. You know, their dynasty was considered very powerful. Right? So then, you know, here this person is, you know, very arrogant and loud mouthed and maybe qualified in the martial science, but that's not what just makes a king. You know, on that. You know, charity, that's another thing. He was unexcelled in that, but as far as these other things. So now he was insulted by her because she said, I won't marry a Sutta. But it was his idea that Draupadi be put on, you know, on weight and stripped in the public. No Kshatriya would suggest that. Even if he's been insulted by the woman, you don't do that. That's way beyond. He's insulted, okay, but still he goes on. But that is the woman's dignity, is her chastity, and that she's only been seen by her husband. And then to make her seen by everybody just turns her into a low class. So Kshatriyas protect, they don't do that. Right? You don't see in Manu any rule where, as a punishment, the woman is taken out naked into the public. Anywhere? No. So therefore, that's the whole point. That's why the Pandavas were dealing with them the way they were dealing. One would say, oh, they're also acting according to caste system. No, they're acting according to what his nature is. Just because you fight doesn't make you a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya is a code of protection and all that.
Right? Positive. Good
Samaritan. Means you have from the Veda, you have Satyakama Jabala. Right? Means this boy, he came to Gautama Rishi at his ashram and said, can I become your student? I'm interested in the Vedic knowledge. So Gautama said, fine, what is your Gotra? He said, I don't know, I'll ask my mother. You know, it's natural, kids don't necessarily know, little 8-year-old boy. He goes back, asks his mother. He says, what's my gotra? Mother says, I don't know. So many men come to me every night, I wouldn't know which one's your father. You know? So then he goes back to Gotama and said, I asked my mother. She says she doesn't know. So many men come, so she doesn't know what my gotra is. Like that. So then Gotama Rishi said, I'll accept you as a student because you're a Brahmin. So if you weren't a Brahmin, you wouldn't have said that. Kshatriyas would have been worried about the prestige. He wouldn't have even come back. Vaishya would have tried to cheat because he wants the gain. You know, he would think, if I tell that, then they won't get. Like that, you know. Shudra wouldn't be interested in the Vedic knowledge. So he was accepted as like that. You know, or you take Vidura. You know, so he's son of a Shudrani. So he can't sit on the throne. But at the same time, because of his knowledge, he was the prime minister. Right? Like that. Or Drona, he's a Brahmin, but his field is the martial sciences. But because he took the martial sciences to the, you know, nth degree, right, where he actually would fight on the battlefield, then he's accepted as a Kshatriya. You know, if he came out in the battlefield, gave blessings, gave some directions and this and that, then went back to the camp and let the Kshatriyas fight, he'd be a Brahmin. So even though he is a Brahmin, but he's accepted as a Kshatriya if he's on the battlefield. Because it's one thing is he's there in his ashram, he gets attacked by dacoits and, you know, he pulls out his bows and arrows and wastes them. That's okay. Because he's just protecting himself. He's not a Kshatriya. You know? But he actually goes out in religious warfare and then he says he's a Brahmin.
But Karna was wrong by conception, not the Varna, because Sun God and
Kunti
was Kshatriya also.
Yeah, but it was out of wedlock.
The Halashal Kibu.
You understand? So because it's out of wedlock, then it's not according to Garbhadana and all those things. So therefore there's a fault. Right? What was Kunti's thing? Kunti was worried about her prestige. Oh, if I have this child, because then it'll be a child hidden in the home. Right? And then she's not a virgin, so then she can't get a proper marriage. So she was worried about prestige. Right? And the sun god, it was, he's come there. You know, one, Kunti was the most qualified of all the girls. You know, just like Draupadi in her time, in that generation, she was the most qualified of all the girls in all the kingdoms. In the previous generation, in Kunti's generation, she was the most qualified. You know, the one that all the men are after, all the kings are after. So you got this very good-looking girl, calls the sun god, he comes there, and she tells him to go away. You know, and then he's going to go back to the sun planet, they're going to say, what happened? He says, I got turfed out by this girl. Right? So his ego couldn't handle it. So it's like, you know, either this conception happens, or you and the person that gave you a mantra, your father, everything's finished. Okay? But out of consideration, because it's his potency, he said that you'll remain a virgin. Right? Therefore she could get married. Does that make sense? Okay? So his false pride, her, you know, worry about status, that created karma. He was very proud and worried about his status. He was constantly trying to establish his status. Does that make sense? So that goes with the, you know, the Ayurvedic point of it's the consciousness of the parents, the time of conception is what makes the child. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay?
About Manu Samhita.
Oh, okay, now.
Manu Samhita is Samhita like like a verse, like a, mint egy vers.
What does it mean, samhita? Does it mean a verse, like this word samhita, or what does it mean here?
Could it be samhita means that it's a you know, some kind of a treatise spoken by somebody, you know, like a body of knowledge spoken by somebody, you know, as instruction, or like Brahma Samhita, it's the knowledge spoken by Brahma. You could, I don't know, you'd have to look up samhita and see what are all the you know, derivations, you know, what would be the root word, because sum, I think, is an affix. You know, sum meaning complete. So what a hita is, I don't know. A full hita.
És ez ugye Brahma volt a manu, vagy Brahma által volt előadva, Brahma és Brigu által volt előadva az a manu szamit, amiről mi beszélünk.
The manu szamit that you're speaking about is spoken by Brahma and Brigu?
Yeah. Means the sages approach Brahma. Brahma describes the primary creation and the secondary. Right? Because that's his field. Right? And then after that, dealing with the japatis, the manus, and the kings. Then he's taught all that to his sons. So this is the rendition given by Bhrigu in the presence of Brahma and the sages. Right? In the Bhagavatam, then you have the rendition given by Narad Muni, the Yudhishthira. So there it's Bhrigu to the sages, and there it's Narad to the Yudhishthir, you know, in the Pandavas. So you can see slightly the difference in angle.
It
means Bhrigu is giving the full work with emphasis on those who are absorbed in Sakam. Right, but your 6th and 12th chapters are Nishkam. Right? But you'll see in Narad Muni's exposition is that he is giving, in 5 chapters, he's giving 2 that's general and then 3 that are basically Nishkam. Because that's what he preaches, is Nishkarmya and Pancharatra. Like that. So he will describe only Daivavarnashram. You know, that's obviously Daivavarnashram. You know, in the mood of Nishkarmya. Right? Well, Bhrigu is, Brahma is, it's explained that it is actually Daivavarnashram, but it's being explained so that everybody could follow it. So those who are following Daiva can follow it, those who are following Asura can follow it. Does that make sense?
By Manu, because Brahma was who?
Manu means the progenitor of mankind, so everybody's come from Brahma. Right? Also, he is known as Swayambhu, because he's unborn. Vishnu is Swayambhu. And Swayambhu Vamanu is all, he just appeared. There was no mother. Right? So Swayambhu, so when you're saying Manu, it can refer to all of them. So in other words, Manu Samhita is that knowledge given by Swayambhu Vishnu to Swayambhu Brahma, who explained it to his son Swayambhu Vamanu, who gives it to mankind. You understand? So therefore, if you say it's Swayambhu Vamanu, but technically speaking, Swayambhu is also Brahma and also Vishnu. And it's not wrong if you take it as Swayambhu Vamanu, because he's the one that's going to give it to us anyway. We've gotten it through him. Like, we get this knowledge from Prabhupada, so we call it Prabhupada's books, but he's just giving us what the previous acharyas are giving. so we're going to get it from there anyway. We know about it because it's come down to us from Manu. Right, and then been compiled by Vyas. Right, and what's been coming down will be, in this case, the rendition. Swayambhuva will talk about the rendition given by Bhrigu that he learned from Brahma. That makes sense?
És ez az egész univerzumra érvényes az összes emberi fajra, félistenek, emberalatti
fajra.
It's specifically for humans. Demigods, they're just enjoying themselves, so they don't, all these things don't apply. Just like you're in the city, you're going to work. You have to get up at this time, you have to, you know, eat, then you gotta, you know, get in your car, and you gotta drive, and then you gotta go to work at 9 o'clock, then you gotta be there, and then at 5 o'clock you get out, you gotta drive back, then you go back, then you have your dinner, then you do whatever you're doing, and then you go to bed. And now if you're on vacation down at the Balaton, you can get up and go to bed and do anything you want at any time. Who cares? Right? You know what I'm saying? If you walk into work in a bikini, you got problems. But if you sit down at the Balaton in a bikini, no one says anything. Right? So the whole point is what the demigods do, nobody cares because they're on vacation. But the point is Manu is there. If you want to elevate yourself, you have to do that. They're already elevated. And they're burning off their karma, and then they'll fall back down. You know, or you could take another example. When you get money, then there's rules. You do this, you're going to get money. But spending money, you can do it whatever you like. You know, you take it down to the casino and blow it all on one bet, or you know, you give it in charity to somebody, or you know, you go out and you know, just go on a spending spree, or you know, I mean, you could do so many things with it. Put it in the bank, invest it, start a business. You know what I'm saying? So for the demigods, as long as they don't commit offenses, nothing really applies to them. You know, that was... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The other way around.
I'm so surprised
that you mentioned. Yeah, isn't it? Because you expect English to come out and go, this isn't English. Once it was with one Swami, it was just the two of us. We were off in some place, and so he'd still follow very strictly the whole morning program and that. So he was giving Bhagavatam class, just him and me. And we were both very tired, whatever it is. So he was talking, and at the same time he started falling asleep. And when he started to fall asleep, he said something that was weird. And as soon as he heard some philosophy that was weird, you know, he immediately woke up, who said that? You know, what, you know, like that. And then it was like, oh. So, same thing, you know.
Mert Prabhupada azt mondta, hogy ez mind a négy jógára érvényes, különösen a kali
jógára. It flies for all the yugas, but that's here.
Ez az összes jógára érvényes, de itt.
Not the heavenly planets. Especially Kali Yuga, because there you need to have that rules, otherwise you wouldn't know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? The other yugas, because of piety, you naturally are inclined to do things right.
But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that it's a crucial
dog. It's external, yes.
It's
external.
It's an external.
Yeah, but external doesn't mean it's not applying. External means it's your body. He's saying, what is the ultimate goal of life? Is Varnashram the ultimate goal of life? No, so therefore it's an external tool to get to the ultimate goal.
Yeah. ezért legyen egy folyamat, ami által gyorsan mégiscsak vissza tudunk menni a lelki világba, mert a varnásom a követésével nem fogunk tudni
visszatudni. We are unable to fully follow Varnashram because we will not be able to go back to Godhead by following Varnashram. Thus he gave Varnashram.
Okay, and why wouldn't Lord Chaitanya eat every day at Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house? Yes. It's a culture. But that itself on its own will take you back to Godhead. That won't work in Kali Yuga. I think it's said if you perfectly follow Varnashram without any mistakes for 100 lifetimes, you can go to Vaikuntha. Right?
100 life.
Yeah, without making any mistake. I think that mentions that somewhere, Vishnu Purana or something. Because perfectly following, if you look at Manu, it's supposed to know Vishnu. So you have to be a devotee, technically, to follow Varnashram. You can be followed by non-devotees, but you're supposed to be a devotee. You're supposed to see Krishna connection. So I guess after 100 lifetimes of only following Varnashram, it itself could take you back to Godhead. Because you will see Vishnu in everything. Right? But, so in this age it won't work, but as a culture, it still is valid. Right? Just like in the other ages, the holy name is the actual working principle behind it. You do meditation, you chant. In a yogi, you're chanting mantras and making the offerings. When you're doing deity worship, you're chanting mantras. So in this age, you just clear away the meditation, the yogi, and the deity worship, and you just chant the mantras. Right? Because they don't have, but the culture still applies. The Vedic culture was always there. You have Vedic culture and meditation. Vedic culture, you know, Varnashram and Yajna, Varnashram and Pancharatra. So why you wouldn't have Varnashram and Harinam Sankirtan? Does that make sense?
But Rupa Goswami and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati akkor azt mondja, hogy ez a Varnashram követése önmagában csak, szóval nem odaadó szolgálat, csak a 64 folyamata odaadó szolgálat.
Rupa Goswami states that actually performance of Varnashram isn't counted as devotional service, only the 64
devotional service. Yes, on its own it's not, but if you're doing that to please Krishna, then...
But it was Prabhupada. For Prabhupada's mercy. Hát a Prabhupada mondja, vagy Prabhupada hangsúlyozza.
Okay, let's say like this. We go down to Tesco. Right? And you buy a banana. Is that banana devotional service? No. But if you take that banana and offer it to the deities, does it become devotional service? So the point is, Varnashram on its own is not devotional service. But engaged in the Lord's service, it becomes connected. How is it you can the lamp can be part of the devotional service of Varnashram camp? You know what I'm saying? Depends how you're applying it. What is your goal in it? So, someone gets married. Why?
For own desires.
Now, what if you see your own desires and you want to remove them and engage them in Krishna's service so you can go back to Godhead? So, are you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It means, why would Kardama's wedding marriage to Devahuti be in the Bhagavatam? He wants to be fully God conscious, but he still in his heart has desires for family life. Therefore he's marrying so that that can be engaged in Lord's service and that can be removed from his heart, that he can go back to Godhead. So its initial aspect may be sakam, but it's ultimately nishkam. We have to be very careful about nishkam is lower, but at least nishkam is human life. and the Mlechas and Yavanas aren't human. Right? So that's the point. We'll throw out the Vedic, but we'll keep the Mlecha. Right? That's my point. So the whole point is it may be a lower level, but that's the reality. We do have a body. The material body is not the perfection of life. The spiritual is, but you have one. You have a mind. You have an intelligence. Right? They still have material conditioning. So, depending upon the degree of that conditioning, then you'll be situated in Sakam and Nishkam. So you give a level because you know Sakam is better to come to Nishkam. But Nishkam still is not perfection. You still have to come to Bhava. And Bhava, you have to come to Prema. So until you're on Prema, technically it's not devotional service. Right? Anything below Prema is not Bhakti. Right? But because it's connected to Bhakti, in pursuance of Bhakti, right? That's what the iti means. Right? That's it. Tas enyavi las sita. The ita, that is, in connection with. Right? Then it gives the effect of devotional service. Right? We're speaking here, but it's material sound vibration moving through material air, falling on material ear, being digested by material brain and resonating in the material heart. But why does it give spiritual understanding? Because it's empowered by the chit potency. So that which is authorized by the scriptures and the acharyas to be endowed with the chit potency, then you get the benefit for it. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is it may not be, but it still is there. Because otherwise, what is the point? Oh, it's external. Oh, it's not devotional service. Oh, we don't have to follow it. Oh, it's fine. And Rupa Goswami is, what do you call it? Yukta Vairagya. So we'll just be Mlechas and Yavanas in Krishna's service. Fine, as long as you purify it. But if you commit offense by offending devotees and dealing improperly with the devotees, even our Mlecha lifestyle engaged in Lord's service is useless. Just like if we use the Vedic to simply harass devotees, that will also fail. Jarasandha perfectly followed Vedic culture, still he was killed by Krishna. Right? Because he missed the point of devotional service.
Tehát akkor azt mondhatjuk, hogy a Varnasma Dharma követése azáltal lesz odaadó szolgálat, hogy mi követjük Isten szabályait, és ezáltal tesszük elégedetté, hogy azzal a hangulattal, hogy mi azáltal akarjuk őt elégedetté tenni, hogy követjük az ő szabályait. Szerint ő lesz odaadó.
Dharma actually becomes devotional service because in the mood in which we follow is that we are actually following God's laws.
Yeah, that's the third chapter of Gita. Right, at the end of the Gita, the conclusion is Arjuna should follow his Dharma in Varnashram, remembering Krishna with knowledge, devotion to Krishna. Right? So he's following his prescribed duties, karma, in knowledge, jnana, remembering Krishna, yoga, to please Krishna, bhakti. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's a tool. If it's engaged, just like you have a spoon in the kitchen, when it's engaged in Krishna's service, it's called spiritual. Not engaged in Krishna's spiritual, so it's not called spiritual. Does that make sense? So you have things that are direct, you have things that are favorable, you have to have things that are neutral. You have things that are unfavorable, and you have things that are against. So the devotee should see everything that's against and unfavorable should be removed. That's why even in your house, you should look around. Why do you have everything here? Why do we have three boxes stacked up on the top over there? Why is that plant there? Why are these lights here? Why are these curtains here? You know, like that. Why is anything here? You know what I'm saying? You know, why are these rugs here? It should be able to be answered, what is its connection to Krishna? It should either be directly, like here, pretty direct, here's God himself, can't get more direct than that, you know, or it's favorable, right? Or it's at least neutral. You know what I'm saying? But if it's unfavorable, then it may not be worthwhile. You know what I'm saying? So people have to go do that in their life. Whatever they got should be ideally direct or favorable, but at least it should, you know, neutral. Does that make sense? Like that. Then it's engaged. So it's a tool. So if it's engaged, it's a tool. It's a, so Varnashram may be more direct, maybe, I mean, it's not direct, it may be more favorable or maybe just neutral. But if it's unfavorable, that should be gotten rid of. Like that. So its only use is its connection to Krishna. Just like everything. His body is only used, his body is external. Why use the body? Right? But otherwise, how do you chant? You know, and you have to sleep, otherwise you can't chant. So sleeping is definitely pretty, you know, non-devotional. But if you don't sleep, then you won't be chanting. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is there must be consistency in this. Because everybody says, oh, Lord Chaitanya says it's external, throw it out. Yeah, but, you know, we didn't even, you don't see sleep come up in any of those discussions. You don't see marriage come up in any of those discussions. You know, so that's all controlled by Varnashram. So therefore, then, you shouldn't be doing it. If you're not going to follow Varnashram, then don't follow anything of anything else other than Pancharatra or Bhagavat. There is no marriage in Pancharatra. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, therefore, then, you know, so this is always great falling out of the mouths of those who are, you know, within, you know, the you know, especially the grihastha or within the ashram system. You know, like that. So sannyasi is saying, oh, it's external, or, you know, those who aren't married, oh, it's external, or even better yet, when the grihasthas say, yeah, well, it's just external, it says, yeah, well, so is your marriage. You know? You know what I'm saying? So that's devotees don't think. Like they'll say, Prabhupada didn't establish Varnashram, he wanted to. But he already established Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, and Brahman. That was always working within his lifetime. Means if you actually know Varnashram, you know Brahmins create Kshatriyas, they create the rest of the society. So if you already created that, what do you mean you didn't create? You already created what can create. And when devotees discuss Varnashram, where do they go into it from? Economics. Or management. That's why it hasn't been established up to today. Because they don't go in from the Brahman, and then from there come down to Kshatriya, then go down. Right? Because, does that make sense? It means in Manu, the first thing to establish is 6 chapters of Brahman. Once you've understood that, then you can create a Kshatriya. And once you create a Kshatriya, then how long is the section on Vaishyas and Shudras? 10 verses. Yeah. So that's the point. Once you've established a Kshatriya, then you automatically have Vaishnava Shudras.
There's so many rules in Manu Samhita. How can we decide which ones have to be followed necessarily and which ones not as important?
What's in connection with Prabhupada's books? You'll notice that when you go through there, some of the points Prabhupada makes are directly lifted from Manu. Like the one, a woman is never to be independent, she always has to be out of her father, husband, or son. That's directly Manu. So like that, so many places are like that. Prabhupada talks about all of it, so what he talks about, that's useful, what's not, is not. Yeah. You know, like that.
de vannak ellentmondások a manuszamhitában, látszólagos ellentmondások a manuszamhitában, amit a hindulógusok úgy magyaráznak, hogy azért, mert különböző korokban írták őket. Különböző szerzők, különböző
korokban. I say that it's because different people wrote it at different times.
If you drink enough beers, nothing makes sense. Right? So, you take that Indologist wife. Very contradictory. So does that mean many people created her? You know what I'm saying? All it is how you say? Agreed upon stupidity. You know what I'm saying? Everybody agrees to be equally as stupid, and that's called smart. What is contradictory? Tell me one thing. So what's so... What is contradictory within mana? Yeah, but this, you notice the one that is also where it starts, the beginning of the section in the 9th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th chapter is saying that they're the cause of all happiness.
It's a contradiction.
Yeah, but that's not a contradiction. That means you don't know what a woman is. Otherwise you would never ask that question. If you meet a woman who's in a good mood, is it nice to be with her? It's nicer to be with her than a man. You meet a woman who's in a bad mood, it's worse than being with the nastiest man. So that means you don't know what a woman is, otherwise you wouldn't have asked that question. In other words, if the woman's good, everything comes nice. The woman's bad, and nothing can work. What's contradictory about that? And the point is, the Indologists don't know what a woman is either. They don't even know what a man is. You know?
But another contradiction is meat eating.
Meat eating? Where is the meat eating contradiction?
Hát, hogy egyrészt abszolút tiltja a húsevés, másrészt meg megengedi, hogy milyen állatokat lehet mégis
megenni.
Point is just like this. It's pointing out that if you really want to make advancement, don't get involved. It's stupid. Why would you want to kill somebody in next life be killed just to eat something? Right? You can eat a vegetable and it's not going to be sitting there chasing you down the road, you know. But the animal is. Right? So the smart person wouldn't get involved. But if you're so stupid, like the Indologist, then yes, and then you can eat this animal and not at that animal. And, but it can only be killed according to sacrifice. If it's not according to sacrifice, that's never agreed upon. No contradiction there. You know what I'm saying? In other words, Manu understands that there's a lot of stupid Indologists around. And they're not going to do things the way necessarily they should be. Right? Do you think it would be accepted in the societies here that the leaders of, you know, Catholic studies were all Muslims or Jews? Would anyone take that university and those courses and that degree serious? No. So that answers your thing right there. Such a strange overlook in the thing that people who are following the culture are not the authorities. You know, in the academic field, the PhD in Indology would be the authority. And not a person, let's say, like, you know, Shankaracharya of, you know, Kamakoti Pitam or of, you know, Badri Ashram or, you know, the Vallabha Acharya or people who actually live it, they would be considered subjective people. And somehow or another, this molecule who knows nothing about the culture wouldn't know what culture was if it came and slapped them in the face. And he's the authority on Vedic culture. Right? So, very strange. And they dare to call themselves academics, thinking that they have intelligence. Doesn't make any sense. You know?
Kérdés, hogy a Manuszamita azt mondja, hogy a ksatriáknál a 10, azt hiszem 10 fő bűn közé tartozik a vadászat és a szerencsejáték. Itt mindenképpen kell kerülni.
There are 10 main sins for kshatriyas, which they have to avoid under any condition.
And Arjuna, vadászat és szerencsejáték.
It means you're not reading properly. It says these 10 sins, if they're overindulged in, they will create problems. It doesn't say if they indulge in it at all. It says if they're taken to any extreme, they will create problem. Because all of those things they have to do. You know. But if they take it to extreme, gambling ruined Yudhishthira. Hunting ruined Prithu and Dasarath. You know what I'm saying? Womanizing ruined Vichitravirya. You know, so there's examples of all these things. You know, taking the property and all that, then Venu, so many things. Venu did. It was. So anybody who took any of those to extreme are ruined. But if they, you know, if they don't need to get involved in them, they avoid them. If they need to get involved, they get involved only how much they need to, and then stop. But if they go beyond, then they'll have trouble.
Mindenki a brahminikus kultúrát követi, még azok is, akik természetű, azok a bakták is, akik természetük szerint sudrák.
So, she would like to ask about Dharma Vadasham.
Finished with all your contradictions? Sure. Sure.
Twice. Másodszori házasság. It's another contradiction. Másodszori házasság.
The second marriage is also a contradiction.
Means, the point is, he's giving what are the various ways that you could have a son. Right? So it's actually physically possible to have a son from a second, a woman who's married for the second time. But you notice what category she's put in. Right? So therefore, it's not in heirs, it's in kinsmen. Right? So anything that's born out of wedlock or second marriage is considered second rate, and they cannot be heirs. They cannot receive the property. They cannot do the shraddha rites. Right? But they're family members, so they're taken care of. Does that make sense? So like that. You know. So Vidura, he's not an heir because of that rule. But he's a family member, so he's treated as a family member. Does that make sense? So they shouldn't, but if they do, this is where they fit in the category. Because then you break down the thing of chastity. Because it's already they're chaste, but then if they give that up, then they're not chaste. You know, then they have to move to the new one. Then, as long as they stay there, then that's called chaste. But if you're taking it as really external form, then it can't be it more than one. And how do they accommodate the two? You know, especially if the first one was any good. Was good. So it's just not proper. at the same time as if the complete focus is there, that's been established as actual chastity. Because one of the great, you know, satis is this girl who's a prostitute. You know, the one who the leper came to her and then he died while she was taking a bath. So then she put on white and went through the whole funeral ceremony. Because her thing was whoever came that night is her husband. And she'll deal with them fully as a husband. So therefore she was chaste, even though every night it's a different man. Does that make sense? Because you're dealing with human life. What is twilight? Is it day or is it night? Does that make sense? But it's contradictory. So that's the point. Indologists think everything goes in a little box. That means that's why they're completely unqualified to study culture. Culture means you have to be able to see overlap. Right? Are the Belgians, are they French or are they Dutch? They're in between. Are the North Italians Italian or Swiss? Or Austrians, they're Germans. You ask the South Italians, they'll say they're Germans. You say, ask the North Italians, they say they're Italian. Right? Slovakians are like the Austrians. Very organized, very everything like that. Compared to if you've ever dealt with Croatians and Bosnians and those, then they're pretty organized. You see this stuff, they keep it nice and everything's, you know, because the influence of that culture is there. Or the other ones are more influenced by, you know, Greeks and Macedonians. And, you know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is there is Sandhi. If you can't identify that, then you do not have any qualification to study culture. You know what I'm saying? So that's the other point of these Indologists. Completely unqualified. Right? Because if they were, they wouldn't come up with these. Otherwise they would have understood the culture. Where's the contradiction? Right? The man tells his son, you can't do this, and then the son, oh please, this sad. He lets him do it, so it's a contradiction. He doesn't do it to ensure that the proper attitude is there, but if the attitude's right, then okay, we can make some adjustments, as long as he understands. But if his attitude goes wrong, then no. You know, can I go out and play with my friends? Okay. And then you find out he's going out on the street with, you know, bikies and druggies and that. No, you can't play with your friends. But you just said I could play with my friends. Because friends means someone who's not going to degrade you. They have to be equals. Right? So, therefore, you know what I'm saying? So, they're not able to understand that. So they can't understand that, then less intelligent. That's the point. They're very smart, very observant. They can see some differences. But I'm sure if you took any great literature and took it apart with a fine-tooth comb, like this, you could find that, you know, in Carol Lewis and his, you know, what do you call it, you know, Alice in Wonderland, that there's a verse in there that doesn't quite fit, and that must have been interpolation that his daughter wrote it in when he was out of the room, or, you know what I'm saying? But because there they don't, because they're literate, you know, it's literary, therefore you appreciate, and something that's weird has a specialty to it. You know, you have a poem and you put in a word that doesn't rhyme. It's considered, if you're that good, it's considered an embellishment. If you're still going to school, you'll flunk. Right? In other words, if you wrote in the way that the teacher told you to write, it would never sell. And if you gave, if they didn't know what it was, and you gave them some of these special literatures and that, probably the teacher would flunk the writer. It's a good chance. You know what I'm saying? But the point is because they go in there with literary appreciation. Therefore, they don't pick it apart like that. Right? But the Indologists, because they are Christians, they go and pick everything apart to completely destroy it. Because that's their purpose. Right? Nowadays they're not, but nowadays that may not be their goal, but previously they were paid to do this. Right? Indology isn't a Western thing. It was created by the British to destroy the Vedic culture. You know, if you had Christians and everything like that were picking apart Muslim culture or Jewish culture, I think there would probably be a lot of university burned to the ground. It wouldn't be allowed. But because the Indians are very tolerant. Do you know that there's never been a war? India has never fought a battle outside its boundaries? That wasn't started by someone else. So that means that everybody's come in. So that means they're the most tolerant culture on the planet. That's the only reason that you have Indology all around the world. Otherwise, if it was up to the Taliban, you'd have a lot of dead Indologists. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's only because it is such a broad culture that they can do it. You know, and they are so confident that they can say whatever they like because India won't say anything. Like that. That makes sense. So that's why it's important that the devotees take the lead in Indology, and then, it comes back into, and better us than the Shankarites. Then there'll be a proper, that was Tamakrishna Maharaj's idea, is that we'll become the authorities in Indology. And then we can, take things in the proper direction. Something else. So all contradictions have been cleared. Okay.
For me, yes.
Okay.
Nothing really.
Well, but if they're cleared for you, you can explain it to them. Like that.
Hogy a Dajva-varnásramában azt mondjuk, hogy a brahminikus kultúra képezi a hidat a Dajva és az Asura-varnásram között.
In Dajva-varnásram, we're saying that the brahminical culture is the bridge between the Dajva and the Asura-varnásram.
Ez azt jelenti, hogyha...
No, it means... Dajva means it's for God, Asura is not.
Asura pedig nem.
And the main symptom of the Asura is that you are in a varna by birth. Right? Daiva, you'll generally be dealt with as your varna by birth until you come of age where you show that you are that or not that and something else. Right? That's why Manu is saying that if you have the opportunity to do your primary education, you'll do it. But if you can't, you can do secondary. But if the opportunity is there to do the primary and you don't do it, you stick with the secondary, you are categorized as that secondary vana. A Brahman doesn't have an opportunity to do his brahminical duties, he takes up business. But when the opportunity comes, he could now comfortably go back into his brahminical duties. He prefers to stay as business, then he's obliged to now recategorize himself as a Vaishya. Right. So therefore the responsibilities of a Vaishya come upon him, and the benefits of the Brahman are lost. And now he can be taxed before he couldn't. Right? Before he could go and, you know, accept charity and all these, now he can't. So the point is Manu is guna karma. Right? Like that. And it's accepting that when they, like there's, when you're doing the Shraddha rites, then there's about, I don't know, how many pages? At least 3 pages? If not more, 10 pages of Brahmins you cannot invite. So that's Brahmins who are, some of them are doing Brahminical, but those aren't good ones to ask. But most of them are not doing Brahminical activities. Or they're not following Brahminical culture in some way or another. There's some defect in their occupational duties, means in their economics or in their ashram. Does that make sense? So, because the forefathers are very pure, so the offering needs to be carried through someone pure, so they will be unsuitable. It won't get there. Or it may get there, but the forefathers won't accept it. You know what I'm saying? So you may have so many people who are not able to perform the duties properly. Like that. So that's okay. But as long as they don't, but if they don't, then they're recategorized. Right? It mentions that even a Brahman, if he's involved, like in as a witness, if he's involved in Shudra activities or these other activities, He is counted in a witness as a Shudra, not as a Brahman. Right? So you see guna and karma is there. Right? And it says that you don't lose your caste, right? Then in the 11th chapter. No, it is 9th chapter, the thing on the women as equal to Lakshmi in the house. It's in the 10th chapter. No, 9th chapter. This 10th is Varna Shankar, and 11th is... 11th is Prayaschitta. So in the chapter 11th on Prayaschitta, then it's talking about you don't lose your caste because you have to work with low-caste people. You lose it by becoming intimate friends with them. Sitting with them together, eating with them together, this and that. But not if it's being done, you have to sit with them or deal with them on occupational level. But if you accept dealing with them on ashram level, then you lose. You know, because a businessman may have to deal with low-class people, and, you know, so many things may be there. Does that make sense?
Mert brahmanikus kultúra az, amit a Dajvavarnásomban minden bhakta követ, az ugye azt jelenti, hogy a brahmanok kultúráját követik, még a shudra természetű bhakták is.
We're saying that we're all following in Dajvavarnásom brahmanical culture, so that means that even devotees who have shudra natures are following brahmanical culture.
Yeah, because they're Vaishnavas. So automatically Brahmins, but outside the Daivavarna ashram, the Shudra may not be a devotee, so therefore they act as a Shudra. It simply means for us that the way they make their money is as a Shudra. Most devotees work for somebody, so it comes out like that. But that's also because you can't necessarily perform your duties in another varna and get anywhere. You know what I'm saying? There's not a whole lot of opportunity for a Brahmana Kshatriya. And even then, still, you're a teacher, but you still work at a school or you work at a hospital. You know, so, you know, or you're a lawyer, you work for a firm, so you still, they still take the Brahmins and turn them into Shudras. That's the Vaishyas. That's, Vaishyas like it like that. They want it, the Vaishya wants to sit on top of the pile. And that's the problem.
De akkor hogyan mondhatjuk azt, hogy a Dajnavarnesram és az Asuravarnesram az megjelenési formájában ugyanaz? Mikor, valami, mikor a Dajnavarnesram lényegében brahminikus kultúra mindenki számára?
How can we say that Dajnavarnesram and Asuravarnesram appears to be the same when Dajnavarnesram actually means brahminical culture?
Because the culture that's there for the Brahmins would also be followed by the Dvijas in the Asuravarnesram. But they're not doing it to go beyond Brahman into Vaishnav. Right? It means in the Daivavarna ashram you follow Brahminical culture to come to the realization of devotee, of Vaishnav. But in the Asuravarna ashram, Brahminical culture is followed not for that, it's simply for the Dharma is for Artha and Kama. Right? While Brahminical culture means it's for elevation to go back to Godhead. So that means the Daivavarna ashram, the Brahminical culture, is used as a stepping stone of moksha to get to bhakti. It's used to liberate yourself from the material world. That's the thing. The devotional activities, they take you towards prema. The varnashram activities cut off your attachment to the material world. So you become liberated. Understand? So that's how Varnashram assists the means. Bhagavat takes you back, takes you directly. Pancharatra also takes you through the deity worship. And then those rules and regulations that are taken from Varnashram, right? The definition of Achman and all these different things, that's all from Varnashram. But it's only those things that are directly for the deity. That's Pancharatra. So that is all progressive. It'll take you right on through. But those things that are attachments that aren't covered by your engagement in the Bhagavat and the Pancharatra, that is covered by Varnashram for the purpose of removing the attachment so that we become freed from the material entanglement. Right? So performance of Varnashram duties from the platform of not desiring a result, right, means naishkarnya, gives you liberation, not prema, right? But worshipping the deity and chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, living that gives you prema. So as long as you're attached to the material world, you're not going to get prema. So you have to deal with those attachments. The Pancharatrika and the Bhagavat Pasat will remove so much. You know, in fact, will remove everything. But the point is you still have choice. One chanting the holy name can remove all the sin in the universe. It's already gone, but we're still attached to the sin. So it's up to us to agree to give it up. Therefore, if we're not agreeing, then you have Varnashram to engage it, so it's purified, and then it goes away. Make sense?
Shudras.
And Shudras means?
Shudras follow Brahminika culture in Dajavarnashram, but in Asuravarnashram not.
Everybody's following, but the point is if they don't follow, they're not considered fallen. Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas have to follow the standards of cleanliness and respect and all those rules. The Shudras should make the endeavor to follow them, and that's considered good. But if they don't, it doesn't matter, as long as they do their duty of assisting. In other words, the guy can be completely uncultured at the house, but when he comes to work, he does his work as a Shudra perfectly. He will be elevated. But a Brahmin, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, if they perform the occupational duties right, but the ashram aspect is not right, they won't be situated properly. Does that make sense?
Hogy a brámanákat nem lehet megbüntetni, vagyis hogy nem kapnak egy olyan büntetést a bűneikért, mint mások. Például, amik például erre hozta a Aswatthama példáját, aki ugye megölte a Pándava vagy Draupadi öt fie, és mégis csak számüzetésre ítélték, és nem ölték meg. És következő életében ő lett a vjászadév.
You've given the example of Ashutama, although killed the five sons of Draupadi, was only banished, but his life wasn't taken.
De azért ennek az az elve, hogy azért, mert a brámanák úgyis meg fognak tisztulni, hogyha végzik a folyamatot.
And the principle of this seems to be that Brahmins will anyway become purified if they follow the process.
De ez csak arra vonatkozik, hogyha valaki véletlenül követel bűnt. Tehát ez nem volt egy véletlen bűn, amikor valaki megöl valakit.
When they commit sin, by accident, like not with intention, but this sin wasn't.
No, it doesn't say that. It means a Brahmin cannot be capital or corporally punished. Right. But these are people who have been established that they are Brahmins. You understand? Ashutama is a Brahmin. They make a mistake. They have the brains. They know what's right. They'll contemplate it. They'll understand it's wrong. The Kshatriya, the passion, they can't forgive. They can't give up. They can't do these things. Right? What was his name? He was as a Guru Dakshin, he had to get the earrings from the king's wife. Anyone who wore these earrings then would not suffer, hunger or thirst or being tired. So the Guru's wife wanted to do a big feeding of the Brahmins, and she didn't want to get hungry or tired of that. She wanted those earrings. So he went to the king and ask him about that. So then, the king agreed. He went, got the earrings. And when he was leaving, then the king was saying, here's such a pure Brahmin that you only can have pure Brahmins except the Shraddha rite. So he thought, here's a good opportunity. Let me ask him to accept this. So he agreed, and they brought the offering, but it was cold and it had a hair in it. There's a hair in it, that's food for paisachas. Brahmin can't eat it. So he said, I can't accept this offering. King got upset, said, you're blaming that which is not blamable, finding fault in what that which doesn't have fault. Therefore, I curse you to not have any sons. Right? Because the Shraddha rite is what's for sons, and that the whole point is from that, then, you'll have a son, then you pay back your debt. So I couldn't pay my debt to the forefathers because you're not accepting it, so you shouldn't have a son, so therefore you can't pay your debt back to the forefathers. Right? So in other words, the Vedic curses also are in line with what it is that's wrong, not just, like that. So then the Brahmin cursed the king, is there is a hair there, you can't see it, you're blind, so better you be blind, you'll create less trouble. So then the king then got worried, and then they looked, they found a hair. Then, immediately, inquiry was sent back to the kitchen, why there's this hair there. The lady who was cooking didn't have her hair tied up. Right? So this is Mahabharata, so then it shows that women should always keep their hair tied, right? Because if not, then hairs get loose, right? So then the king said, you know, okay, you know, it was, you know, that was, you know, you were right, there's a hair there, so you please forgive me. So he forgave him. And then the Brahmin said, okay, now you forgive me. Because there was a hair there. You said there wasn't, there was a hair there. You know, it went both ways. So the king said, I can't. Because I'm still, my heart is still seething or burning from the insult that you didn't accept my offering, that it was below standard. So I'm a Kshatriya, I can't forgive you. So the Brahmin said, it doesn't matter anyway, because your curse won't have effect, because you were cursing me that the food was perfect, therefore I would curse. But the food wasn't perfect, so therefore your curse won't have any effect anyway. So then he walked out. So that's the point. The Kshatriya, the Vaishya, Shudra, they'll be clouded. That's why they need the punishment. But the Brahmin, because of the clear headedness, with time they'll figure it out and contemplate and they'll come to the... But that's someone who's a Brahmin. By the Vedic definition, not by Western Malecha definition. Now if you do something wrong, Western Malecha definition means Ashutama, because he did that, is not a Brahmin. So therefore then the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas, and they place themselves on the top of the society. Because if you do anything that they feel is morally wrong, they'll write anybody off. They wouldn't know how to identify a Brahmin if they came up and slapped him in the face. You know? So, that's the problem. So, he is, therefore. That's why Arjuna was very reluctant to go into battle with Drona and Kripa. Because they are Brahmins. So even though they're making this fake of acting as Kshatriyas on the battlefield, so technically they can be fought with, still he sees them as Brahmins. And even to take it to extreme, Karna wouldn't fight with Yudhishthira because he is so truthful. He said he's a Brahmin, he's not a Kshatriya. He's too good to be a Kshatriya. He's a Brahmin. So Karna wouldn't even fight with him. He'd fight with Bhima, with Arjuna, the others, but not with Yudhishthira. You know what I'm saying? Because Mano, throughout the text, in the seventh, it means in your seventh, I think, in your eighth, then again in the 11th, you know, he says a king should never punish a Brahmin. Right? Like that. In other words, the Brahmins will take care of the Brahmins. And the Brahmin himself, if he feels through, you know, whatever is going to be best for him, through studying the scriptures and like that and that, he'll purify himself, or through increased other sadhana, or through austerities, you know, or through very harsh austerities. Whatever he feels is the best way to deal with it, then he'll deal. You know, like that.
Is that the reason that Kripa went away without any punishment after the night slaughter?
Yeah.
And he just became, I mean, he was restituted as the old family Brahmin.
Because it's warfare. So in warfare, the field is diplomatic and they do weird things. They shouldn't. But if it happens, then it happens.
Even a night.
It's saying, but whatever it is, it's still, you know, like that. If after that all he does is go around at night and kill people at night, then yes, he won't be accepted. But he goes back to his normal duties and it's fine. Point is that you have the effect of this. You don't worry about the past. Worry about, he did this, he did that. That's the mode of ignorance. He did this, he did that. If he understands this wrong, then we move forward. But otherwise, how long are you going to label? This is a Christian thing. You know what I'm saying? The devotees are polluted by Christianity. Eternal damnation. It doesn't exist, you know, in Judaism. Who in the Old Testament didn't do something wrong? Right? Maybe Abraham. right? But Moses did something wrong, Jacob did, everybody did something wrong. But it's like the spots on the moon. It doesn't take away the brightness of it. They can see, okay, there's mistakes made. That's, they move on from that, and then they continue. Only this low-grade Christian idea that, you know, eternal damnation. But that's for people with no faith. This rule is for the faithless. It's not for those with faith. You know? Okay. So for those who niti is more important than Dharma Shastra, then yes. That's the point. Christianity is not actually on the level, it's not manamoy, it's pranamoy. It's morality. It's not actual Dharma. Jesus followed Dharma. But to take people from Kama to Dharma, it was too big of a step, so he took them from Kama to Artha. Right? So he preached morality. That's why it said he preached Upadharma, secondary religion. Be nice, be good, that's not religion. You know? That God says it should be like this, therefore you're nice, that's religion. But just to be good, be nice, you can be good, be nice, and not be God conscious. And you can stick on it, though you're doing it yourself. Right, the example of the adulteress. Example of the adulteress. Right? Means Jesus said, okay, she's wrong according to the scripture, she should be stoned. Great. So whoever themselves is pure, go ahead, start throwing the stones. You know, so everyone dropped the stones and walked off. So that's also an aspect, if one knows the psychology of morality, generally those who have made the mistake to, in their own mind, rectify, they become a crusader of that thing. You know what I'm saying? Even though they have done or may even still be doing. Very common. Like that. So that's also a weakness of taking that platform, that kind of Christian platform. You know? But I can't say about the Muslims. They seem to be pretty, you know, strict. But the Jews, it's understood, people make mistakes. You know, because all of their guys did. But it still doesn't lessen the value of their example and instruction. Because if in the beginning it's good, end is good. If in the middle something happens, okay, things happen. Right? If the beginning is good and the end is bad, and that's it. Then you'll say that, you know, maybe there's something else. The point is if they come back to the proper station, then that's okay. Right? But those who don't have faith and who are moralists, not religionists, they can't accommodate that. Because once something wrong has been done, they do not have the broadness or generosity of heart to forgive it. So that's passion. Just like the king. Like that. But those in the mode of goodness, they can move on. Does that make sense? Just like you see, go ahead, next.
A bakták már gyarogatásomban azon kívül, hogy foglalkozni kell a feltételekhez kötött természetünkkel, és ezt ugye az odaadó szolgált által fel tudjuk emelni, azon kívül mi a jelentősége a barnának?
When you're dealing with devotees, besides the aspect that we have to address our conditional natures to deal with the elevated, what's the significance of the varna in the beginning?
Varna, occupation. For us, we make no distinction of varna in relationship to ashram. We do not. Right? But when it comes to occupation, then we make distinction. Right? Those that are the Bhagavat platform of activities, right? Or the Pancharatrik platform of activities, we make no distinction for the devotees and Pancharatra, those who are second initiated. Right? So anybody can preach, anybody can do the deity worship, who has the adi, you know, like that. Right? But to take up the activities with a specifically brahminical occupation, only those that have that nature should be doing it. Anybody can come do an artik for the deity, you know, an offering, dress the deities. But unless they're very well situated on the devotional platform where that's obvious, right? Then you would only have Brahmins be a full-time pujaris. Because they're the only ones that can do it. The Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras would feel uncomfortable as a full-time, day-in, day-out service. But as a devotee, they would be comfortable to come in, maybe dress the deities every day, or do an artik every day, or something, and then go do the thing that actually addresses their conditioned nature. Does that make sense? You know, administration should only be done by those who can deal with it. Depending on the level of it, then, you know, Brahman has that ability, he can do it, but otherwise the Kshatriyas or Vaishyas, that if it's on a certain level, then they can deal with it. You know? Like that. So you think business, this business decisions should be made by those who know business. Administrators should create the environment, see that it's going in the right direction. Brahmins can give advice that is properly engaged. But the business decision should be left up to businessmen. And if it's not, that's why you see temple businesses always fail. Because the administrator makes the decision and he's not a businessman. So he wouldn't have a clue what he's talking about. If he did, why aren't the temples stinking rich? Right? Because they know management, they don't know money. How to generate it. Right? You understand? Some do know the science and they can, but they still get others to do it. Right? The smart manager, why he'll be making money when he can have 10 other people doing it for him. Right? So for the Kshatriya, even if he could do business to do business, with that knowledge and administration, he could create the environment that 10 other people can make business. You know what I'm saying? But if he had to, he'll do it. So that's the advantage of Daivavarna Ashram. Because there's a higher purpose, you can bring anything in through it. The Suravarna Ashram, because you only have the externals, therefore the restrictions are more closely held. Right. You know, Daivavarna Ashram, the pujaris could clean the pujari bathrooms. Right. The Suravarna Ashram, then they wouldn't. Shudras would clean them. Means they won't even change the light bulb. They have to get the Shudra. Right? But because you're doing it for Krishna only, it's Krishna's light bulb, therefore it's part of the deity worship. We're only mentioning actual examples. You sit there in the dark because there's no shoot around to change the light bulb. I've seen it. So the point is, because it's on the same principles, the Asura and the Daiva can work side by side. So at any time, someone from the Asura could come across to the Daiva. And those in the Daiva won't be disturbed that you have a completely different culture to interface with that the Asuras are running. Right, in the Daiva Varnashram, the Brahman is respected as a Vaishnava. In the Asura, he's respected as a Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So in any case, his movement and occupation and lifestyle stays the same. This in one is recognized, actually the higher principle is there and the other one not. And vice versa. Someone from the Asuravarnashram that comes in, a Brahman from the Asuravarnashram comes and interfaces with the Vaishnavas, he's still accepted as a Brahman. But the Vaishnava activities, then he's kept out of. But the Brahminical, yes. You know. He could feed him, he could accept charity, like Prabhupada's father. He'd just find sadhus and Brahmins and feed them. Even though they may not have been devotees. Yeah, yeah. They may develop love for from a devotee of Radharani. The Brahmins and that, they get blessings. Maybe they're not interested in that. Like the Brahmins not interested in money, but you get blessings that you're, you know, become wealthy, business will go well, or you'll have a son, or, you know, your son will pass his exams, or, you know, mundane, but whatever. They're not interested, but they can give blessings. So even if they're not interested in devotional service, they can give blessings. So it's, you
know. Does it work, that isn't it?
It will work on the pious side. It won't work on the spiritual. Not like that.
Végezhetik az alacsonyabb barnák kötelességeit, de az alacsonyabb barnák nem végezhetik a magasabb barnák kötelességeit. De ez az első szabály, ez nem vonatkozik a ksatriákra. A ksatriák nem végezhetik az alacsonyabb barnák kötelességeit. Miért?
It's a rule in Mano that higher varnas may perform duties of lower varnas in case of emergency, but lower varnas may never perform, not even in case of emergency. The duty of higher varnas, but this doesn't apply to the kshatriyas. So even the emergency kshatriyas cannot perform the duties of lower varnas. So why is it?
No, they can. They can take up business. It says that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't drop little business. Brahman could do kshatriya or vaishya. Kshatriya could do vaishya. But vaishya can do shudra.
The vaishya chinna shudra. Brahman said.
But that's because in there is this, generally they won't. Generally they won't. That's the point. You'd rather be the king of one village, take the tax from one village, and that's it, than not, because of the passion. But in the Daiva Varnashram, it can work the other way. That's what Prabhupada is saying. Malechas and Yavanas are taking up the brahminical duties and preaching. And it's working. Except when they try to apply Varnashram. So that's given by Narad Muni in Bhagavatam. So his point is, because it's within devotees, then anybody can do anything if there's a need. But ideally, still, you try to situate someone according to their nature. Right? Because within the Daivan Ashram, basically everyone's preaching. Right? So that's what we look at it. It's okay, it's a dominical, so we take up full-time preaching or this or that. So we're looking at it more from the Ashram Dharma rather than Varna Dharma. Right? Because technically Ashram Dharma is dominical. So if you make a lifestyle out of Ashram Dharma, that is dominical. Right? So that's basically what we have in our society. But what Manu is talking about is economically. Economically, they shouldn't. Like that. Because it's just too difficult. It'll make too much of a mess. Because the Vaishya may take out dominical things, but he'll make a business out of it. You know, doing yajnas and samskaras and this and pujas, and he'll charge big money and make it, because he's clever, he'll make a big business out of it. You know, kshatriyas is a challenge. Like I've seen some of kshatriyas teach class. Everything's a challenge, you know. Like that. The student can't understand this, you're so stupid, you know, can't you? Come on, get in there, take it up, get it, you know, it's like this. It may work for a kid that's a kshatriya, but it's very annoying. You know? They can't, you know what I'm saying? And they can't be steady because there's not a consistent challenge. If the challenge is consistent, they could do it, but if it's not, then they don't. So unless they can work out a consistent challenge, then they're not stable teachers. Vaishyas, unless they see profit from it, won't be teachers. You know, they'll teach for big money. They won't teach for small money. Brahmins will teach because that's what they can do. You know, they're annoyed that they're getting so little pay for it, but they still continue as teachers. Right? Unless the material situation is such that they can't maintain on that, then they may switch to something else and go and get a job that pays more. That's why to identify who are Brahmins, who are dedicated to teaching, and who will teach whether you pay them nicely or not, and then arrange for them to get paid as nicely as possible so that they will be encouraged to stay there and not out of frustration go somewhere else. Right? The people who aren't that qualified don't pay them good. You know, they don't need to. Because they're not that good, they shouldn't be paid that good. And they're not that dedicated. That makes sense. You know, unless it's in some assisting way or something, you know. Like that, that's, you know, important and all that. But I'm saying actual the teaching.
Break for
you? I'm okay if everybody else is. You want a break?
Can I have a half break?
In the bathroom?
Yes.
Yes, why not?
Because I don't know
how long we can go. Like that, probably until lunch is ready. Yes. Did you say pretty please? Something. It's an American joke. She'd probably only catch it. Huh?
You said pretty please.
Pretty please.
Then may I ask, how would you define a Brahminical Institute?
Brahminical Institute.
Yeah, our institution. Because we are always, you know, challenged whether our college is a Brahminical institution or not. Because according to Varna, or occupation, rather, we are teaching. I mean, we teach.
So why is that not dominical?
Sorry, why?
Why would they challenge that it's not dominical?
Because in the Brahminical Institute, teachers are not supposed to get paid.
Teachers can be maintained. How are they supposed to eat? They live off the air?
I mean, yeah.
That's my point. And if they can't answer it, they should shut up. That's my point. They don't know what they're talking about. Take a hike. You know, go do something else that you know what to do. You know, all these half-baked ideas that they come and shove down everyone's throat is only going to destroy everything. If you don't know what a Brahmin is, don't know what their occupation is, keep your nose out of it. You know? Like that. That's my point. Stick to managing people that you don't want to know anything so you can keep them stupid, so they're stupid enough to do what you say even though you don't know what you're talking about. Like that. They can't answer it. What do they think? Brahmins didn't eat? They're supposed to live by charity. So then why haven't the managers arranged that they're living by charity? Why aren't people giving charity? So therefore, then they're not protecting. So therefore, they're not Kshatriyas. So they've dropped themselves out of Brahmins, they've dropped themselves out of Kshatriyas. So they're Vaishyas. Okay, if they're Vaishyas, then they should be giving in charity themselves to the Brahmins. Not arranging that it's there and people could give. They may give themselves, but it's on a bigger scale. So then they should be giving themselves. They say, I'm not a Vaishya, then you're a Shudra, and then you better shut up. Because it's none of your business. You don't know what you're talking about. And if you say we're all Vaishnavas, then why are you complaining it's not a Brahminical institution? Vaishnavas automatically Brahmin, so therefore automatically it is. You know what I'm saying? What is your administrative, you know, trick? What are you trying to do? They want to destroy the Brahminical culture, so everyone just does what they say without asking a question. Bus. That's not Brahmin, that's not Kshatriya, it's not Vaishya. Even Shudras are a little more respectful. So we have to be very careful that our Malecha culture doesn't bleed through, and we're so confident and proud of it, which is symptom mode of ignorance, that therefore we think we can shove it down everyone's throat just because we got a mouth. You know, Brahmins shouldn't be paid. You know, they should be getting dakshin. So what's your arrangement for the dakshin? So the point is government's giving dakshin. So if it's understood like that, then it works nice. If the teacher sees that I'm getting paid, yes, then it's not proper. But that he's getting money, what's the problem? Right? Prabhupada gave book distribution as you go out, you're giving a book which is knowledge. People appreciate that knowledge, and to reciprocate, they give you a dakshin. That's how Prabhupada saw book distribution. Not that so-and-so collected so much money. That's a Vaishya mentality. That's not preaching. You're engaging the money in preaching. Therefore, because you engaged it, it became preaching. But it wasn't preaching when you were on the street. You were collecting money. That was Vaishya business. You took that money, gave it to Krishna, then it became transformed into transcendental. But Prabhupada's idea, you're out on the street, you are doing something that the people appreciate, and you're going out as a Brahmin, and they're reciprocating with you as a Brahmin. Right? That's preaching. On the street. The other one becomes, once you take that money and use it for preaching, or the deities, or, you know, devotees, something transcendental. You know what I'm saying? So, what's so glorious about that? So therefore, the temple is working on it less than glorious, so therefore then, what do you expect if the Brahmins also have to put up with working in this way? You know? They don't want to work this way either, but they have to live. And the great pontificating Kshatriyas and Vaishyas haven't worked out a way for them to live. You know, my whole point is that you're gonna lead society, then do it. Create society rather than break it down. You know? The temples won't maintain it, the devotees won't maintain it, so if the government, which is Kshatriyas, and they give charity to Brahmins so they can function, what's the problem? kings give villages and other things, endowments to Brahmins so they can run their schools. So regular money comes in. Just because it's regular money doesn't mean that it's payment. It depends how you look at it. It could be, then that's shudras. But if it's not, then that's reciprocation for the work done. So the point is it goes by what's available. Government gives you this much, you get this much. Government gives you that much, you get that much.
The teacher shouldn't consider this as payment.
No, it's dakshin for work they've done.
Yeah.
So point is therefore they should be inspired to see that they're active and are doing something that they feel it's worth it, that people are giving a dakshin for.
And that is for their maintenance.
Yeah, and they'll use that for their maintenance and, you know, whatever else. They'll also, you know, use some for preaching and this and that, whatever it is. That's their business to deal with.
But it can be regular.
Yeah, why not? Somebody likes to give a regular donation to the temple. So is the temple being paid? The temple is on a budget. You know, we're being paid. So the temple president is a shudra because he's got 10, number 3, supporting members who give X amount of money per month to the temple. So now he becomes a paid servant. No, it's a donation. So why is it, if they give, it's a donation? Why, if the government gives, it's not a donation? They don't call it that, but that doesn't mean that we call it that. We could also say they're being paid. They like what you're doing at the temple, and then they're paying you to do it. No, they're giving a donation. So the government's also giving a donation. Right? Because they're not paying, they generally call it grants. Anyway, so grant is a donation. Generally when you see, when they give for education, they're always called grants, because it is different. They're not technically being paid. You know, you want to do special research work or that, you get a grant. You know, so the same thing should be there, the same mentality, even if you're doing regular classes. But you should see that those classes are up to standard and that people really appreciate that it's worth it that you're getting that money. If you're not, then you could say that's below standard. Then you're just looking at it from the point of safety and this and that. Then it may start to fall into the shudraman facility. You know, otherwise the temple president is doing something and he's getting a car and he's getting that, so, you know, and getting a flat and his bills, phone bill and electricity bill is being paid, his prashad is being paid, so is he being paid? Or is he just being maintained by the temple? Because it's Dominican. When you're working within Brahminical, then you do have to take care of the people. They don't live off of air. If they did, it would be great. Right? If the Brahmins just lived off of air, then they wouldn't have to put up with all this crap from everybody else, and they wouldn't have to put up being insulted constantly by people who don't know what they're talking about. Prabhupada wanted Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta. He wanted all that done. I haven't seen one temple that's made it their thing to see that it's consistently done and carried through. I haven't seen one. Maybe there are, but I haven't seen it. I'm uninformed. Probably the 70. I mean, he was trying to establish it in the 69, I think. And he made some push. Satsurut was the only one, as Brahminical metal, started doing it. So there are some devotees that actually got Bhakti Shastri degrees back in, you know, that mid later 70s. Satsurut, well, once Satsurut stopped, that's it. Then he disappeared until Burijan, also Brahminical, then started the VIHE and started pushing the thing that they become awarded again. But these are not temples. So then the question is Prabhupada says our centers are educational centers. Where is the education? You know, one says, well, we're building a new temple, we have to collect money. fine. But before that temple, when you just had a funky little house, where was the education? And after 6 months, when you've collected all your money, where's going to be the education? You know, the temple doesn't do it. Right? Like that. So, therefore, if you have to have it in a separate thing, great. But then those leaders should keep their mouth shut. They cannot do it. They should be very careful to what the comments they make. They can't educate, they can't establish education themselves. They should not get in the way of it. At the same time, the Brahmin should act properly and shouldn't be proud and shouldn't act as separatist, because that's also not the mode of goodness. That's passion ignorance. Right? It's being done for the benefit of the community. Arjuna Krishna in Gita is constantly pushing that you have to perform your duties with knowledge. So that means you have to, one, know what your duties are, two, have knowledge. This whole thing of, you know, don't read, don't worry about it, just do what you're told, is not what Krishna says in Gita. He spends 600 verses trying to educate Arjuna so he knows what to do with his duty. That's Bhagavad Gita. Not just 866. Just surrender to me, bus, finished. You know, the temple president's Bhagavad Gita. You know, Sarva Dharman Parityaja. Just surrender unto me, bus. They don't even quote the rest of the verse. Right? Authority is important. Krishna will never go against authority. But somehow or another, strange, he is the supreme authority, and he's saying, have knowledge. Krishna doesn't see any problem in having knowledge and respecting authority. Right? We're not Stalin, we're not Mussolini, we're not all these people that the less you know, the less problem there is. You know? But,
what other characteristics are there in the Brahmanical institution? So we are maintained by the government or the ISKCON, whatever. So.
ISKCON, community, whoever likes to give. The point is, as you see what people need, they get according to that. You know? I know Harikesh would go to a lot of trouble because he saw people wouldn't come and teach in the Gurukuls because they had no place to stay and no money to maintain himself. So he'd organize places, he'd get people to donate places to stay. He'd get people to donate for money to maintain them so they could sit down peacefully and just focus on education. That's Kshatriya. Right? Not to say, oh, you're not Brahmins for doing it and give no solution. That's not even a manager. That's a troublemaker. That's someone who, what you call in English, half a brain is dangerous, or a little bit of knowledge is dangerous. They have a little bit of knowledge, Brahmins aren't paid, therefore throw the whole thing out, and then it's just back to stupid people that just do what I say. Tell them to do. You know, we're tired of that. Prabhupada wanted a class of Brahmins who would save the world. Right? You know what I'm saying? People will come from all over the place to come to your school because you're giving knowledge. Even karmis will come. I don't see that many karmis in the Bhagavatam class at the temple. Because in the temple, they're being told, just don't worry about it, just do what I say. Right? You have somebody come who they feel they'll get knowledge from, the temple fills up. You know, some visiting guest, this, that comes, temple's full of devotees. That person's not there, they never come. Why? But those same people are down at your institution. So maybe there's something going on. Maybe people, the soul likes knowledge. It's natural for the soul to function with knowledge. Chit potency means activity with knowledge. Right? If it's knowledge without philosophy, it's sentiment. If it's philosophy without knowledge, I mean philosophy without endeavor, then that's mental speculation. So we don't want to be academics, but we don't want to just be those who work without any understanding. Now, someone who's not into academics, just as convinced already with the simple, with the basic philosophy, they do their little bit of reading, they do their full-time, great. But if one has the ability to know more, why shouldn't someone know more? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But one has to be very, very careful. Like that.
And of course, Brahmins are supposed to be tolerant as well.
That's the point. You have to tolerate because they're saying because they don't know. They're sincerely thinking, if everybody just does what I say, we get this work done, that's the best thing. In one sense, it's nice. You're listening to authority, you're following authority, you're engaged in service, body, mind, okay, it's great. But at the same time, it's when they do run into problems and have questions, they're told the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have a cold. You know, take some, you know, honey and ginger tea. I got a fever. Yeah, take some honey and ginger tea. You know, I'm feeling weak. Yeah, ginger and tea. I got bad days. Yes, say take that. You know, I got a boil. Oh yeah, ginger and honey. So the whole point is it's just, you know, you should surrender. Okay, I'm going out there and surrendering. I have problems surrendering. Well, that's because you're in Maya. Just surrender. But what's the process of surrender? Don't ask so many questions. You're getting mental. Just surrender. You know, it would be nice if they knew the process of surrender, therefore can explain it. Why would they be so emotionally strong that, we shouldn't explain this if they didn't know? Because if you knew and the person couldn't figure out, the first thing you do is tell them. So because they can't tell them means they don't know. So then a doubt comes to my mind, are they actually surrendered themselves? Right? So when their absolute power is taken away, they also leave, go out and get a job and an economy like everybody else. Another face in the crowd. You understand? So that's the point. Is what is their motive for doing it? Because otherwise they can't explain what's going on if they don't know the science of Krishna consciousness and what's going on. Some do. They explain. So I'm not talking about those who do take the time to explain and don't put up with devotees being mental and spaced out and they, you know, push them to come to a high standard. That's fine because they can explain what to do. That's what we want. But those who tell you, don't read, don't study, don't worry about it, just do as I told and that's the best thing for you. It's kind of like, I never found that verse in the Gita. Right? Respect of authority, that's important. But this idea that you don't have to know anything, learn anything, you know, to read books, it's Maya to discuss, to even question why I should do like that, means Arjuna throughout the whole Gita is questioning what Krishna said. That's God. So we can question, why does God say this? Why can't we question what the temple president says? You're not making politics, you're simply asking, what do you mean? How do I do it? Oh, you're unsubmissive. Somehow or another, God doesn't think like that. So you got a problem here. But the point is you have to prove yourself as proper Brahmins by one being tolerant, developing the knowledge, having a vision, moving forward. You know what I'm saying? Because your higher authorities, they understand what you're doing. So they don't give you any trouble. It's just others. So that's the point. Those that have a vision about Krishna consciousness, they're trying to get you to establish this. So therefore, you know, that's there. And the others, what to do? They don't know. They're doing the best. That's the point. We can accommodate. That's okay. But they shouldn't have an attitude and then start taking pot shots. Otherwise, there's nothing you know, as far as vocality goes, nothing more dangerous than an annoyed Brahmin. Right. Of course, there's also nothing more dangerous than an expert Kshatriya who's good at politics and who's going to get in trouble. You know what I'm saying? But the point is politics, once they're done, they're over. But what's been spoken lasts.
Right.
The people who arranged to poison Socrates, no one even knows their name.
Right.
They're still in the schools, they're studying Socrates. So that's the point. So in the West, the pen is louder than the, stronger than the sword, but in the Vedic, the word is stronger than the sword. So it's a matter of one has to cooperate, one has to find what works. But it has to be as they can only say these things if you yourself aren't seeing them that way. So you have to be very, very careful within your institution. You don't fall prey like other educational institutions where there's fighting over seats and over salary. This seat gives more pay. Therefore, there's politics over it. Right. It shouldn't be necessarily that it's worked in that way. You have to find what works, that people get what they need, you know, and that they're Brahmins, they don't take more than they need. They want to live luxuriously, then they should get themselves a job. You know? Like that. But if they want to leave at whatever the institution, but same time as those who do make these decisions in the institution should see that people are getting taken care of. Otherwise, why they'll stay? You know, they shouldn't fall in the same thing, just surrender. Point is, they are surrendered, that's why they're in society. They are surrendered, that's why they're in the temple. Right? They could be out there doing all kinds of stuff. They're not. They're in the temple. You know, so you have to find that balance between them. So you have to see what is it required to live. You know, what facilities can be created, this, that. You know. Try to help people find apartments if they already have apartments that's there. You know, I'm just saying, and somehow try to be more self-sufficient. You know? And don't expect, work on, this is what we have, this is what we live with. We get more, great. Don't work at, we want this much, therefore we better get this one. You know what I'm saying? Because then you're dependent upon others. That's not the miracle. Right? Government's giving you X amount, figure out a system that with that amount of money, you can run it. Then if other people start donating and all that, then you can expand that. You know? And if Maharaj wants such special programs, he's sending people to get the money, then great. But otherwise you should figure out, okay, here, you know, we get this much money, that means we can do this many teachers, that means, you know, it's just like, here you have, what do you call it? So it's telling me a professor generally gives two, maximum three, 1.5 hour lectures in a week.
Right? Yeah.
Last week we gave 15.
Yeah.
Right? So the point is then you have to find a balance in giving the lectures and being able to prepare for it, study and develop your course material and stuff like that. But don't work on the karma, say three lectures a week, what's that? You know.
Yeah, that's the constant.
Yeah, but the point is it probably goes back to when you had theologians who would study all day and therefore then they would come up with some really solid lecture of substance, three a week they could do. That's probably what was there before. But nowadays, as they don't prepare, they just walk in and crack some jokes and this and that and try to be trendy with the kids and make it with the girls and, you know, say something and tell them, you got to read these 20 books and summarize them and walk off. You know, there's very little substance in the class. You know, you got to go out and study it yourself anyway. So that's not what it's meant for. It's meant that you're studying so much that when you come in and say something, it's got such impact because you have so many hours of study behind that, you know, then it has some meaning. But otherwise, you just say, okay, we have X amount of, you know, periods per week, so that means we need X amount of professors by two to three per week. No. You know, you work by, okay, someone can give this, it means we're doing, we can give this many lectures, so that means instead of taking 10 professors, we can do it with 3. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. And so then, you know, unless of course you need a certain amount of people, whatever it is. I mean, you have to balance it with the government regulations, this, that, blah, so many things. But my point is, don't look at it, okay, we deserve this much, so we're just going to get it. No, we should be working that people are happy that you're getting that much. Then it's dakshin. But if it's just, I do this, I only have to do this much and I got to get paid, then that's salary. Like that. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, sure.
Like that. So that's... So if you have a brahminical mentality, then people won't bother you. If they do bother you, they'll only bother you once. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Very important. So you have to find the balance. You know, you can't be proud of yourself. You can't think that we're superior because we're dealing in knowledge and the temple. We're dealing knowledge. They're just karma. No, because they're doing things that directly engage in Krishna service. You're giving knowledge that you can engage. They're already engaged. You know, so it should be combined. That's why the Gurukul system is that you'd be studying and serving. You know, but here it's just only the study part. So then you have to see and encourage people to apply it. At least the devotees, the karmis, you know, what to do. You know, but by association, they'll pick up stuff anyway, like that funny old lady in the back, you know, she's working stuff and asking their questions. Still, they're asking questions. You know, she has more questions than any devotee there. You know.
They have some practice as well to do. They have temple practice, but that's like 2 hours a week in the first semester. And they are supposed to do some Sankirtan practice as well.
Oh, okay.
But that's the second year, so...
But I'm just saying, things like that, it's nice.
And we have to work out how to integrate those who become serious devotees. Because some just, you know, come from the streets. Most of them, as you could see. But some lead and the others become devotees.
I mean, except for the ones in, you know, saris or kusas, you can't really tell who's from the street and who's a devotee.
I suppose this year most of them were from the street, except for those in devotional
class. Oh, really?
Yeah.
All the rest were...
They just came for the knowledge.
Oh, because they seem to be fine. They ask more questions than the devotees were asking, you know? Like that.
Yeah. But really, we don't know what we're going to do with them. Because if they really become serious about Krishna consciousness, you know, I mean, we just don't have the energy to deal with all of them, because, you know, they...
No, but the point is your education that you're giving should be education for devotees.
Yeah.
What you would use in your life. Because the point is this the straight point of the faith and all that? That then you have to be a little bit more careful in the beginning, but when you're describing the science of it, that whether it's devotees or karmis, it's valuable. Devotees don't know the science much either. Very few are that well read that they know the science. You know? So it's like what we were explaining there. It was interesting to the devotees and to the karmis.
Yeah, but after that they want some personal treatment as well. I mean, they want, you know, to be preached for or something like that.
But that should be part of your... Means in the education it should just be natural part. Means what classes you would give to devotees to develop and nourish a devotional creeper. They could attend those.
Yeah, but that means preaching. And if we have so many students, you need quite a few teachers as well. Because
no, but you can have a full place, you know, that you're teaching. Like somebody gives a Bhagavatam class, and it's a whole room, it can be one person, it can be 10,000, it doesn't matter. Same thing applies.
Yeah, but they want treatment, you know, personal treatment.
But then you work out a system that those who are students take care of those who are students. That's the Vedic system. In other words, it's not uncommon in the university to have tutors, which are just students, right? Your professor, your lecturer is then overseeing the class. The senior students take care of the junior ones. So therefore, it should be part of the training that when somebody comes to a certain level, if they're like serious, if they're not serious, they could still do the same thing but on purely academic, that they could start tutoring those below them in whatever area they're needed. That's the way also you never have to go beyond a small core group of very serious teachers. Because otherwise you drive yourself nuts with administration and trying to maintain a big student, big staff that's always changing.
Mm.
You know? But if to be a university you have to have, 12 full-time professors, only have 12. If you had 14 that are good, great, or 20, great. But if you only keep it at 12, don't try to expand beyond that.
Mm.
Then you only need one administrator.
Mm.
You know, and possibly even one of those professors can be the administrator. Yeah, or you all be, whatever, it doesn't matter. But I'm just saying, in other words, administration becomes very simple.
Yeah.
Government's giving you money like that, because their thing is how many professors you have. They don't care how much staff you have. They don't tell you we have to have 12 professors, 15 bathroom cleaners, 22, drivers. They just say how many professors you gotta have. So if all you have is professors, and professors do everything, then great. Part of the service can be that they, part of their training, they clean the place. Whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so you just work in like that. So, and the devotees teach the devotees. The ones that know more teach the ones that know less. Those doing Bhakti Vai Baba will teach those doing Bhakti Shastri. Those doing Bhakti Shastri will teach those who are completely, new, that don't know anything. Your Bhakti Vedantas teach the Bhakti Shastri. Your Bhakti Sarvabhamas teach like that. So then you have a tutor system where that Prabhupada says, how is one man teaching hundreds of boys? He teaches the oldest, they take the youngest. Vishishta was one teacher, he had 10,000 disciples. Right? If he teaches 12, and each of those 12 teach 12, then in basically four generations, you have 10,000 people. Right? So one teacher can do that. If he has a little bit of organizational, ability. Durvasa had 10,000. Same. Those are all students. They're all studying. So the really core stuff, he's only teaching those 12. So you may have classes where you only teach, this level of people. Or it's your Bhakti Vai Bhav class. They're only teaching Bhakti Vai Bhav. But you could have that the Bhakti Shastri stuff, the work, is done by the Bhakti Vai Bhav students. They're the tutors for, and you can line them up when they come in. You start pairing them off or doing, or it's also very common that you study in twos, that you support each other in it, like that. You do your final exams alone, but you do any work, study together, you do projects together, you do stuff like that. The exam is done, like that. So then they work together, then you have people above them teach. Them teaching so many. Someone has an ability, they can only handle one person. They tutor one. Someone else is good, they can handle 5-6. They handle 5-6. It's very individual. That way then you get it done. You use your brain, and then just a few of you can run the whole thing. And design it that you don't need many people. Universities just turn into politics and all this because there's too many people. You can't keep the same mood. But you should keep it that you have the same mood for the whole school. Right? then you know where you're going, you know where you're taking them. So then the non-devotees will come in, and then those who are interested, then they have a tutor system will take them through. And those who are there only for the degree in that, then they're taught by those who only are doing the degree. In other words, those who are not devotees and are not interested in becoming devotees teach those who are not devotees and are not interested in being devotees. As far as tutoring, they all go to your classes. Like that. But those who are devotees teach those who are younger devotees, teach those who are interested in being devotees. Because by teaching means from what I statistics I saw, by hearing you get 30%. By hearing and writing, hearing and I think it's seeing, you get 50%. Hearing, seeing and writing, you get 70%. But by teaching, you get 90%. So you explain to them that this is the Vedic system, that by teaching it also, you learn more than as a student. Maximum you can get as a student is 70%, but as teaching, you get 90%. So they've gotten their 70% from the teacher, then when they teach it to the next group down, they take it from 70% up to 90%. So it should just be part of the system, and it should just be explained. Doing some service, develops the interest to know, to learn. So a little bit, what's not at all inconvenience for anybody, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, however often they can do it, every day, every other day, once a week, you know, just something, it gets your work done, you know, plus they've done their service, you know, they've done their tutoring, like that, except for the newest person, everybody else is tutoring, you know, and like that. And then you work out a system, use your brains, figure it out. You know, because you have to see what works for your institution, the kind of people you have, the kind of classes you have. So it'll be, the principle is universal, but the exact detail, that will be specific for your school. Right? And you work this out, you'll have something that no other school, no other, you know, these adult education have. That's that, you know. The other ISKCON colleges don't do this.
Mm.
Right? Because they use a Western academic paradigm. So it's very hard to run, very bulky administratively, very expensive. Well, the Vedic is, you consolidate it. You have a few good people, they do, then the teachers teach the student, then everybody's consistent. So you produce a consistent graduate, you know, and postgraduates, in that they have the same full understanding, mood, everything like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah? You know, once you get it worked down, then it can be duplicated.
Mm-hmm. You know,
or expanded. That makes sense?
At the moment, we just need those 12 persons. This emergency pickups are fine.
Yeah, but whatever you have, work with that, you know. If there's only who's here, then work with that. And if you do that, then with time you'll get more. Either you'll get them or you'll produce them. Like that. So like that, it'll work slowly. Does that make sense? You have to have that vision and dedication to it, it'll work for you. It'll work eventually, you know. Already something's working. I mean, the government gave you buildings, so something's going on.
And money and everything. So.
Yeah, you're being recognized, so it means you're getting somewhere. The results are coming. So education's slow, but don't let it be slower than it means. It should be as quick as possible, though it takes time.
Yeah, look, I'm missing. I mean, that was one of our biggest problems, is the personal relationship with the students. Because what we realized that since devotional service or anything, bhakti yoga is so new for them, if they are not already dedicated devotees, that if they are not interested in that, if they don't want to become a devotee, they just leave after a while. Because they didn't expect that, they just expected something academic or whatever.
Yeah, so they should get that academic. You know, but then they should get that personal treatment in the academic. In other words, they should have tutors, mentors like that that deal with it on that. Because then they go, then at least you have academics who think the way we think. You know? It's not as ideal as when they come to devotees, but you know, they think the way we think. So they should get some attention. So you figure out, you know, what kind of attention they need that will satisfy them and give them that much.
So tutoring means like a regular basis, so it would be every week or every day?
You work out what works. It can be that in your day, let's say you have a 6-hour day, and in that you might have you know, one lecture, two lectures, three lectures, that there's some time, that there should be some time set aside where if they needed, they could go and meet their tutor.
We shouldn't push them. So they should rather. So we should give them the opportunity, but we should let them.
It means no. If it's necessary, make sure they go. But what I'm just saying is, sometimes somebody has more questions; they have to go more often. Sometimes by doing once, they can work more. That you'll just get from experience what works. You know, by doing that, you know yourself or your observance, talking to the tutors, talking to the students. You know, just see how it runs. Present the idea and just see what, you know, first figure out something that you think will work by just your experience in the university. It means you had tutors, you had mentors. What worked for you?
Because in the Hungarian educational system, that it has no tradition. I mean, maybe it had. I mean,
Then study from somewhere else, like Oxford has, and these other places have. Look at what works for them. You know, Oxford is a, you know, basically high student to mentor ratio. I think the Americans is low. Yeah. So you find out what works nice. Talk to other academics who've been through and have explained what was there. What was their experience? How often do they feel they needed to go? I've heard that in Oxford they feel they need more attention. They don't get it. At least those who come from the American system feel they don't get as much attention. Maybe those who grew up in it feel it's perfectly fine.
Yeah. As I know, I was at Oxford, they have every... If you have a tutor, it's every second week. And you have to write an essay in those the 2 weeks period. And the tutor gives you a list of bibliography. You have to read all the books and work out the topic. And you discuss it with the tutor in detail. So it's like every second week.
Yeah, whatever works. Yeah. Whatever works. I mean, as we're doing it at a primary secondary level, it's not that it works every day they sit with them. You know, because they don't have that much that they can work on their own. You know, maybe on the secondary level then it'll be less often, and at the tertiary level it'll be even less. So you just have to see what'll work and will nourish it. You know, it doesn't even have to be exactly, it can be just questions. They've gotten work, they want to ask questions. Instead of bothering the teacher, they can go to the tutor. If the tutor can't answer, then the tutor goes to the teacher. Because that means if he doesn't know, it's a question that the lower level is doing. So for him, it's review.
Yeah.
So by teaching it, it's a review and he learns it more. So if he can't answer the question, means he doesn't know that level so well. So then there should be a time that the tutors can meet with the professor. You know, their question is what to do with this, and then the professor can tell, okay, give your students this. That way in the classroom you don't have to deal with homework and this and that, unless it's something generic. You're simply taking them through what they should know.
So we should really mobilize the older students.
I would.
Make them, yeah.
Because then you don't have to expand your staff. They're already there for free. Right? Because otherwise you have to get, you know, teachers, you have professors, but then if you have to start getting teachers and assistant teachers, you have to pay them all. Right? Like that. And then who knows if they're going to be dynamic. So the students are already there. They're young, they're enthusiastic, they're intelligent. So use them. That's the Vedic system.
Yeah.
like that. You know, only bringing an outside teacher is something very specialized in something like that. So then you deal with it. Excuse me.